This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Let's play ball, it's game day. We want strikeouts, base hits, double plays. Take the field, hear the roar on the crowd. Come on, Marlins, make us proud. Come on, Marlins, make us proud. Keep hoping and dreaming that you will serve. Swing away, a diving catch, a stolen base, a perfect game, a triple play, another playoff race. Yes, World Series champs will be. Keep hoping and dreaming that you will serve.
Somebody call Dave at 8183, tell him the tornado's right over his house.
Yeah, I seen that.
This thing is massive. Oh my God. I was waiting for that microwave tower to go. Never did. Plug it into a plug-in.
Where?
Anywhere, right? First plug-in you see. You want that on tape?
No. Oh.
It is. Holy, oh my God, they're losing shingles now. It's right there. Yeah, Morgan, get downstairs.
It's okay.
Interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, but he's gay.
We do not pay taxes for y'all to spray our kids in the face. That's ridiculous.
Funny because it's vomit.
Yeah.
It's exactly how that works, Don, all the time, always without exception. That was just a look of unbridled loathing and contempt you gave me. Well done, Rick Emerson. Why, thank you. No, it was nothing. It is 9 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of Geektober in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. Are you tweeting about the vomit?
I am.
Excellent. Good for you. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy and occasionally stomach contents. Thank you for joining us. It's not so much a cavalcade as it is just sort of a cascade, a fountain, a stolen base. It was really the only way to follow up the staff thing. I mean, there was just no way to go directly from that to Dream Theater. That would have just been musical whiplash of the worst variety. It would have been irresponsible broadcasting, Don. And I won't be party to it. No, ma'am.
Well, in that case, I admire you.
Well, you know, it's a brave thing we do here every day. Because we few, we happy few, we band of brothers. And this is all true. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming to you from high above the Milkpacking District. And yes, Virginia, there is a Milkpacking District, and we are high above it. High above everything and everyone, really, in every sense. It's 503-505-6964. You want to join us? If you want, you should get with the talking. 503-505-6964. You can also direct message us on Skype if you like. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is Rick Emerson Show at Skype. Somebody asked me the difference between this, you know, Skype. There's three different things you can do. You can call, or you can send a text message, or you can do that creepy thing where you're on a microphone and your own Skype thing, and it, you know, it sounds like you're right in the room. The latter two are really your best bet for conveying your thought immediately. I mean, look, it doesn't matter to me, you understand. It all comes out the same in the wash on this end. I'm just saying, because we are just deluged by emails and just text and things popping up at the screen and going, bing, 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 you know, and a guy saying, like, ruffle, you know, with, like, a little, like, some damn icon that just, like, tips its hat at me or some crap. You know, I'm just saying, you know, if you're in a place where you can do, like, the audio, you know, where, like, you Skype, you know, with the talking, where you just use your microphone, or the actual phone, if there's something you really feel like you need to convey, you know, like it's really important, you feel as though your life depends on it, A, that's just sad. And also, the phone is really your best bet there for cutting through the pack. Not that I'm encouraging you just to, you know, just to abuse that, like, willy-nilly. Rat-a-tat-tat. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up today, Pop Culture Authority answers the question, why was the movie E.T. given a PG rating? Since there's nothing I can think of that would necessitate that. And here's the thing. Actually, I'm just a little bit of a half lie there because Dawn was mentioning, I said, hey, Dawn, how are you? And she said, I'm fine. And I said, how's that Pop Culture Authority? She said, it's great. And I said, what's the question? And she said, why did E.T. get a PG rating? And I said, oh, well, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And she said, aha, but did you ba-ba-ba-ba-ba? And I said, I had no idea. And it really I'm not saying it wasn't going to be interesting anyway, but I said, I thought I knew the whole thing. And yet, no. I only knew part of the story, Dawn. I didn't know the remainder of that anecdote.
And knowing is half the battle.
We just stole, like, three things there.
Yes.
I'm sorry. We paid homage to three. We had an interpolation of three things there. So Pop Culture Authority today, why did E.T. get a PG rating? Also, another installment of the greatest songs ever made, which is right here. Awesome. Let's see. So wait. Is it awesome? Well, let me check. It's fantastic. I got that right here. That is the greatest songs ever made coming up. Also, Geek Watch from Dawn Taylor. And Dawn will be tracking the following headlines for you as well on this Tuesday.
Two women, one man, and a stripper pole.
Yeah.
End up in an arrest.
Oh.
A couple buy a human skeleton at a yard sale.
Yeah.
And Iceland is the most gender equal country in the world. I'll have you
But does
know.
That all mean that they have both sets?
Yes.
What do you mean?
That's what it means.
Never mind. I guess we'll have to find out later.
Find out later.
No. We should totally just start a thing just called the remainder of the anecdote. And then just see how long it takes for, you know, for a lawyer to call us. You know, just like a goof. Just as a sort of experiment. Anyway, so that's all in the way today. Pop Culture Authority, Geek Watch, Greatest Songs Ever, and those stories, and so forth. What is today? Today is a Tuesday, is it not?
It is.
An exciting rest of the week. So tomorrow, just not to get ahead of ourselves, because it's, you know, still today, at least where I am. I don't know if it's tomorrow where you are.
Well, I am in a different time zone.
I was speaking to the world at large, but it's interesting to note that you're in a different time zone over there. How did that work?
You were looking at me, though.
Is this like one of those things how Baja California is in Mexico?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like you are North American, I am Guam. So it's always tomorrow where
I'll
I am.
I'll take care of you.
You know it's always tomorrow in Guam?
Stop it. You're weirding me out. Stop. So high. All right. My hands are huge. These filthy hands. I'm sorry, I was watching all this Ren and Stimpy this morning. It's just in my head now. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming up tomorrow. That is Wednesday, the 13th of this Geektober. Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be in the studio with us. He'll be bringing the top five. Thursday, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio, and we'll also talk to the Oregonians, Anna Griffin. And then Friday, Dave Helfrey. You know him as Baron Von Gulo. Low, low. The man behind Fright Town, which is like the most badass thing in the history of badassery. I'm not going to go through it because I'm a pussy, but I would recommend that you go through it. Go through it just so you can reduce yourself to teary-eyed rubble. And seriously, it'll F you. It'll F you long and it'll F you hard. Right in the brain.
The F place?
I was just going to come up with a... I was trying to come up with sort of a... you know, like a thing in your head that wouldn't really exist, but that would be funny to be effed in. Like how, you know, like that phrase, you know, like, I hope you get cancer of the AIDS. You know, like that, but sort of an effed in the, I got nothing.
Yeah, in the fear hole.
Fear hole, that's good. I was just going to say, do you know that opening in a guitar is called an F hole?
Oh, there you go.
Fear hole. It's sort of a filling your fear hole. Thrusting directly into your fear hole. I'm going to write that down.
Stretching
here
wide the opening of your fear hole.
With its colossal girth. Let's forget we had this part of the conversation. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, so that's all on the way. Don't forget to be getting, speaking of Geektober. Now, I know I keep getting these emails from people who are like, I am carving it. One guy emailed me last night. He's like, I started carving it some geek-themed, you know, it's a geek-o-lantern. Because I got to tell you, I mean, here's the thing. This guy emailed me and he's like, I'm carving blah, blah, blah for the geek-o-lantern because he got all this Think Geek stuff to give away, which is awesome. And then he's like, I got halfway through and it wasn't going the way I wanted, so I just scrapped it. And I was like, okay, but you know, you realize like time's a wasting. I mean, you got like less than 2 weeks now. I mean, it's got to be by midnight the 25th. And right now, like, it's just the Kim Jong-Rick guy. And don't get me, let's have no illusions about this. I will gladly give every prize to a guy who created a jack-o-lantern that on the side has me as Stalin. I would give, in fact, if it were up to me, I just give him all that stuff right now, because that's the best thing any human being could use their hands for, other than waving palm fronds at me.
And look at it this way. So far, we have one entry. We have five prizes.
That's right. We got four things from Think Geek, and then I swear to God, and the other thing is just a $100 gift certificate. And so the guy emails me last night, and he actually had a photo of just, like, pulp. And he's like, so I got halfway through this geek-o-lantern carving, and it didn't really go well, so I just smashed it and started over. And I emailed him back, and I'm like, your funeral, but, you know, you got like 12 days, basically. So
yeah. Look at it this way. At this point, even if your jack-o-lantern is kind of lame, the odds are in your favor that you might win something.
They're not even in your favor. They're really a lock at this point. Even if you're just, even if it was carved into the shape of a carveless pumpkin, you're kind of ahead of the game. So
I didn't carve anything into it, but I named it Han Solo.
Yeah,
do I win?
Yeah, because you're just right on the side. Geek stuff, give.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. If you all you don't step it up, we're just taking it all home.
Yeah, we're just keeping this stuff.
I mean, I'm not even going to lie. I'm just going to go home with us.
I can totally use that USB, that TARDIS USB thing. Yeah, this is awesome.
And I have no compunction about doing that. Rick Emerson is not a proud man.
I will take that sonic screwdriver and I'll just carry it with me and wave it around at people all the time.
It just sounded like the geekiest parent threat. I will take this sonic screwdriver and I swear to God, I will come up there. TARDIS. You'll be a TARDIS by the time I'm done with you, young man. Anyway, so you send those to contest@rickemerson.com. You can see the solitary entry, standing isolated, like a whippoorwill on a hill. You can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures. But you carve a pumpkin or, you know, a gourd or whatever. You carve that or decorate it. You send it to contest@rickemerson.com. It's got to be by midnight on October 25th. Midnight on the 25th of this month, this Geektober. And you send it to contest@rickemerson.com. Somebody asked if they had to be in Portland to win. You do not. If you are a winner, like if we pick you as one of the five, we may in fact ask for like a picture of you like in the process of carving. So you might want to take those. You know, like sort of as you're in the process of doing so.
Maybe like your pumpkin with like a newspaper from the day, so we could prove that you didn't just find this really cool picture on the internet somewhere and
pose in front of it in like a forced perspective.
Yeah.
And then cut off part of the pumpkin and send it every day until we pay the money. All right. It is 503-505-6964 if you'd like to join us today. And I had hoped to be speaking to everybody. Well, that's not really technically true. It's not the speaking thing. I was hoping to be listening to myself. This will all make sense when it comes out of my head. I was hoping to be listening to myself speaking to everyone today. Now, through new headphones. I was hoping to have new headphones today, and it's not really the case. Because these headphones. Now, did you buy those headphones just for this program
when you
launched? What are those, Sennheisers?
Yes, they are.
All right, well chosen.
Thank you.
You know, I'm partial to Sony's myself, but to each his own.
There's this great. They have these great headphones over at PDX FM that I love. And I use them every time I go over to do Ham-Fisted Radio. And when I was there the other day, I put them on and I was talking to Bobby Fatboy Roberts. I was like, I love these headphones. They're comfortable. They fit because the Sennheisers are good, but they're just finally starting to loosen up. So they're not squeezing my head. And I loved these Sonys. And Bobby's,
you coveted them?
Well, yeah. And then Bobby's like, yeah, they don't make those anymore. Everybody loves those and they don't make them anymore.
No, it's...
Like, Oh, well, great.
It is probably similar to the, if not exactly the same as the ones I'm wearing, because Sony, they sort of discontinue stuff a lot. I know they have what you're talking about, and they're similar to this. They're a slightly larger version of the ones I think that I've got.
I think they're a little smaller.
They've discontinued the kind that I wear. The kind that I use, actually, because it's like Jordan, you know, is Michael Jordan on the court, just you and your shoes here. It's really just you and the headphones and the microphone. And I know it sounds like a Poncer's complaint, but you get the wrong headphones or different headphones, and it's like your whole day is ruined. I mean, the show just goes in the toilet if you don't have the right headphones. And I know that sounds dumb, but it really is. I'm trying to think of an example. I guess it's like maybe a guitarist having to use, I don't know, different strings or something or whatever, but it just changes your whole thing. And so they quit making these, and these are the same kind that Sarah used, and so Sarah actually just had to buy new headphones. And so she got the Sony, I believe they're MVR6 is the one that replaced these, which is like the MDR7500s. And she actually, and here, I feel good about my purchase that I'll be making soon, because she bought the MVR6, and she said they felt so good. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. Sarah got new headphones, and she just walked around her apartment with them on her head, on her ears, plugged into nothing. Just sort of walking around holding the cord for like 3 hours. So I'm looking for. So I meant to buy some of those last night, because these, I love these headphones, and it's like they've got my name written on the top, and it's like the everything. And it's just, I'm very attached to them, because broadcasters and their headphones and their microphones form a very close bond. And but they've now reached the point where when I take them off, it's like a shower of black confetti. It's like I'm at a My Chemical Romance show or something, where just bits of plastic fall off the side because they are so old and ancient. And now I feel like I'm gonna have to burn them on a pyre out front and just sort of, you know, do a, you know, and chant like some sort of, you know, oh na 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 na, you know, some sort of Tolkien-esque, you know, farewell victorious dead song as they fade. Anyway. I overstate things sometimes. So I meant to get new headphones last night. I really didn't. The only reason that I'm bringing that up is because I didn't. It's a long chain of events, but I didn't get new headphones because I wasn't able to leave the house. And the reason I wasn't able to leave the house is because it was cold outside. And that matters less, except that my heater isn't working. I have no heat in my home. Like, none. The furnace is just not working at all. Not working in any way. And, you know, but so I have like one of those, you know, like what do you, like a space heater, you know, yeah. Like the little, which is fine, except like you can't just leave that on when you're gone. You know, you can't leave a space heater running. I mean, that's like rule number one. It says on the side, like, never leave unattended.
Yeah.
And, you know, my luck, it's like I'd leave and that I would just see my, you know, the next time I saw my house, it'd be on the news and, you know, just my dog glaring angrily from the window, you know.
That's the thing. You can't leave something like that alone with Max.
No, because he's evil, and he'll try to shove Philo into it, or he'll try to use it to cook some sort of food he's pilfered from the fridge.
I was going to say, he'll try to reheat pizza on it or something.
Oh, I've got this Cornish game hen I've been hoarding. Now I can finally take it out. And I'll have it on a spit. Yeah, and so it would be like authorities believe this dog, and he'd be let out in handcuffs, like snapping and snarling, you know. You'll never take me alive! You know, as, you know, he would have had like a whole ham or something on a spit, or again, Philo. But at the same time, it was so. I mean, it seemed so much colder than it was last night. I'm not trying to talk about the weather or anything, but I mean, it was like 47, but it felt so goddamn cold that I actually didn't want to leave the house for a protracted period of time because it was that thing where I felt bad leaving the dogs, even though they've got fur. But it's like Philo was all just bones and fat, and I just felt bad leaving him just in the cold house. So I stayed home so I could run the space heater so the dogs wouldn't get cold. Because I'm a pampered fat ass American with pampered fat ass pets. So now the heating guy is supposed to come by today, but because I'm a moron. And I have waited until, like, the first week of the cold snap to have the heating guy, you know, to call the landlord and say, hey, boyo, about the heat. So now the guy's supposed to come by today, and that probably won't happen. You know it's going to get to, like, it's going to be like the cable guy. I'll be there between 5 and, like, never. It's going to be the end of the day at, like, 8:59, and the guy's going to come and go, yeah, I'm not going to make it out today so much as I'll make it out next week sometime. Bye now. And hang up. And it's like, because the landlord's paying for it, I should have to sit there and suck it down. Do nothing. So anyway, I'm speaking to you through my old ass, like tired headphones.
Well, this is, I gotta say, this is that time of the year though, it starts to get cold, and I deeply appreciate living in an apartment. The two times I appreciate most living in my apartment, one is kind of when it's summertime because my apartment stays kind of cool, but my old house did too. But the thing is winter, because my house was 100 years old, the house that I sold like 2 years ago. And it was like 100 years old, and it just all the windows leaked, and it was just freezing cold, like all the time. And it had forced air heat, but the forced air heat didn't really get all the way upstairs very well.
Right.
And so it was always cold, always, all the time. And so now I like live in this apartment, and it's just kind of really nice because, like, the bedroom has one of those baseboard heaters that just kind of warms everything up slowly. The living room has those electric things in the wall.
Oh, like just, the panels or whatever?
Yeah. And then I just...
How does that work for you?
I love it. I have a thermostat. I turn on the thermostat, and it just goes... And it just blows out all this hot air, like, immediately. It's like...
Excellent.
I have a wood-burning fireplace, and it's just... Because I had a gas fireplace at my old house because I foolishly, moving here from California, I said, oh, when I had to... the fireplace was non-functional, so I had...
It was just decorative, or it was broken?
I thought it was a fireplace, and then I moved in and realized it had been, like...
Just an opening in the wall?
Well, kind of, yeah. It looked like a fireplace. It had there was a chimney. It had a mantle, but it had really been just the place where, like, an old, like, wood-burning or coal-burning stove...
Oh, I see. And they took it up, and they left the opening there.
Right.
They did, yeah.
So I had to have a guy come in and, like, actually put in a chimney thing, whatever it's called. They run a pipe of some sort.
Well, they basically had to make it active by boring a hole for the smoke to escape. Yeah,
and then actually I had to decide if I was going to put in a wood burning fireplace or a gas insert. And I said, came from California, so I was like, well, natural gas is clean and inexpensive. It'll be awesome. And then immediately, like, the prices of gas started just going up and up and up. So every time I'd use the gas fireplace, I felt like I might as well just be wadding up dollar bills and throwing them out the front door.
Yeah.
So I never used that. But now I have a wood-burning fireplace, which is awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, because the wood's natural, too, is the thing. They don't really tell you there. It's natural wood. I mean, unless it was made on Mars or something, or, you know, by the Chinese. So the fireplace is really, really great, and not just for ambience. I mean, it's like, you know, you do realize why primitive man thought fire was the best thing in the history of things, because, I mean, it's awe. And there's something, do you agree with this? There is something very primal about building a fire and warming yourself in front of a fire that you just don't get from a heater, like a baseboard heater. Even if the heater actually throws off more warmth, it doesn't feel as warm. You're like the fire. You're like, this is the roaring primal sensation that I've needed to take the chill from my bones.
I feel like someone in a movie.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there in my chair.
Get me a toddy.
Reading my book.
A leather-bound book and having like a mug of hot chocolate with tiny marshmallows.
Or a big glass of bourbon.
Yeah, or that, sure.
Yeah.
Hey, why not? So you got lots of heat. I got like no heat at my house at all. So I may just be sleeping, here tonight with my dogs. It would just be just huddled here. Seriously, and it's like, but I'm making it so much worse than it is. Like, I'm at my home last night, and because I'm sitting there in my home, where it's like, I mean, it's like 49 degrees. It's not like I'm in Siberia. I'm sitting there in my home with my like high-speed internet and my wireless router. I'm like watching, you know, whatever. I'm like watching South Park on my MacBook and like the dogs are at my feet. And I'm sitting like 6 inches from a space heater. You know, that I bought that was made by, like, children in Zagreb or whatever. You know, and I'm getting up occasionally to go to the microwave to make myself some pizza. But in my head, it's like I'm in a Cormac McCarthy novel where I'm like, you know, I got a chilled blanket around my shoulders and I'm trudging through the snow avoiding cannibals. You know, it's so hard to be alive now.
How can you possibly exist with all this deprivation?
I don't know how I go on. I just don't. I also got to say this. The only thing I'm going to say about this, and we'll get into the news. By the way, today's show brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Beatty, the proprietor thereof, 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211, The Cleaning Solution. And for anything you might touch, gets it back to looking fantastic, just as it did when you moved in. That's your carpet, your upholstery, your whatever. We'll talk more about it later on. I'm just going to say this one thing. Now, you know, and I mean this sincerely. I don't mean this in an Eddie Haskell kind of way. You know I love the audience. I love the listeners, and it sounds corny or cheesy, and you know whatever. That's but people, you know me, I mean this sincerely, because without y'all, and I really am speaking for everybody, Dawn, Cheryl, Bruce, myself, all, we would just be rattling a collection of tin cups, you know, downtown, and just saying like we'll annoy you, like not even for food, just like I will just be annoying you, except I'll also be homeless, so. I mean, as we've said many, many times, without you guys, I'm just some dork. Now I'm a dork speaking to you through the Electro Voice RA20 microphone, and that makes all the difference. So really, the audience is fantastic, and in that audience, up to you and including our friend Laura, who came by last week with her friend. I don't know if they're, I don't know whatever their whatever is, but you know her friend Steve. So they came by. She sent me a very nice follow-up, and he sent me an email. They were great. I met her. We have a mutual friend in Peter Carlin. Blah blah blah. She reminded me of the fact, too, that when Sarah and I were doing that weird, that strange thing, like, a couple years ago, where we were scratching lottery tickets at the mall with an ice scraper for children or whatever. Gambling for kids, I guess, basically, is what we were doing. She came by and brought us some Bezo, whatever. So she's great. She brought us dog toys, which, by the way, I have not yet, just not to give a whole lot of backstory here, but she came by, and, you know, and she works at a vet's office, so she brought us a few things. She brought us, I think Triscuits, yes?
Yeah, Triscuits.
Triscuits, jerky, and then some other sort of comestibles, I think is a word. But then also some dog toys, including this
and
is just a...
And some dog bones, and I had to take them all home because...
Because Max goes crazy.
Yeah, Max goes crazy.
But as a side note, she brought you this Mr. Bill doll that is the same one that Philo has that my friend Rachel gave us, yeah. Where it's like you squeeze it and goes... I think we talked about this yesterday, yeah. So if we did, I apologize. But you said that Bella just goes nuts for
Bella
the thing.
She loves that thing so much. We went to this movie last night, and we came home, and I unlocked the door, and she was standing in the doorway with the Mr. Bill doll in her mouth, with the head, like, in her mouth. And then she, like, runs out the front door to look for Patrick, and Patrick is just, like, charmed and delighted by how the dog comes running up to her with the toy. But, she takes it over to the bed with her, and she lays it down on the floor next to her when she's lying on her bed.
Best toy ever.
And then we're sitting there trying to watch a movie or watch something on TV, and she just keeps leaning over and biting it around the edge. And so it goes, oh, no! And then she just kind of looks at it and wags her tail and laughs, then bites it again. Oh, no!
Look what I did.
And then it's like really adorable for about 5 minutes. And then it's like, okay, stop it now. Stop it
you know,
now.
She's wondering if her jaws were big enough, what sound you would make if she bought you, bit you right across the midsection.
It was kind of interesting. The day I was watching her run around with a squeaky toy, she had this this moose. It was a little squeaky moose with a squeaker inside. And I realized, oh, that's why dogs like stuffed animals
it's
with squeaky
dying
toys.
Dying prey.
Yeah, because they think they're killing it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a happy thing. By the way, I have because I'm a retard, I have a photograph of Philo with his Mr. Bill. And just side note inside a side note, before we talk about our good friend Laura, who dropped those things off. You know, so the deal with Philo is he's one of God's special creatures, and so he has the Mr. Bill thing. But it's not just that; it's that he has a collection of they're dolls, basically. I mean, he has a John McCain toy that squeaks. We have it's like one of those kooky, like girl-to-girl gifts, like ex-boyfriend dog shoot, and it's like, and the ex-boyfriend is wearing a shirt says, like, I'm a heel or something. And then he has this Mr. Bill thing. And so what we realized is it's not just that Philo plays with toys. He, in fact, plays with dolls. That's the thing. I have a dog, and he plays with dolls. And it's like the shame of it all. And the thing about it is, it's like you'll come in the house. It's like if you come home from, just being gone for like 5 seconds, he immediately... runs and grabs one of his dolls before he'll come over and talk to you and do anything. It's like, so we figured out it is like a security blanket. Like, he has to have it. He is very, very freaked out unless he goes and gets one of the dolls and is carrying it around with him. It's like a thing he has to have. So my dog plays with dolls. I just put a photograph of it up. You can see Philo with the Mr. Bill doll. It's rickemerson.com/pictures. You go to the pets gallery. rickemerson.com/pictures. You can also, by the way, see what not a dachshund he is.
Oh, God, look at him.
I mean, it says dachshund on his paperwork. It's just stupid.
No,
it's
not
just
even.
Absurd. Anyway, so listener Laura, I did have a point on this. She brought these dog toys and then whatever. You should get a picture of Bella with the Mr. Bill thing, and then it'll be cute.
I will.
So she also brought Triscuits and jerky, and I gave this preamble about how I love the listeners. I love the audience. They're really, really great. She brought us all this jerky. So, yesterday after the show, you and I were sitting in the kitchen, and I said, hey, I'm a little peckish. Do you want some jerky? And meanwhile, of course, I'm already opening the packages of jerky and shoving it into my mouth. And you said, I don't know, beef jerky, how is it? Because, sometimes not everything's everybody's taste. And I said, well, I don't know, it's not that great, to be honest. And you said, well, I'll pass. And I said, salmon jerky? As I'm shoving an entire fish, basically, into my mouth.
And I could smell the salmon jerky all the way across the room, and I was kind of like, I don't think so.
Wait, and by that point, it was too late, because I didn't think I'd eaten all of it. So, but the beef jerky, I was like, I don't know, it's not, it's a little brackish. Not all that. So then later, I was sort of looking at it, and there was this big fear that we were inadvertently eating dog treats, which was not the case. Because I made her clarify like 50 times, I'm like, these are human treats, right? This isn't for jerky, jerky for dogs. And then so I was like, oh, I'll inspect that. And so I looked at the jerky, and yes, in fact, the underside is just covered in mold. The side that I couldn't see.
Oh!
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh!
So, see, I couldn't see that side when I was eating, or I didn't see that side. I was looking at it from this side where there's no mold at all.
You don't look at both sides of your food before you put it in your mouth?
No, because I don't assume that people give me food that's covered in mold. I don't assume it's like a shred, like a frosted wheat, except that it's molded wheat. And again, she's great. Love the audience. All the other jerky appears to be mold-free.
Yeah, and it's not her fault. I mean, it was packaged up. It was sealed. She wouldn't have known.
That's the thing. That's what I'm saying. I'm not blaming her. I'm going out of my way because here's what I don't want to be like, oh, I feel really bad. Not her fault. She couldn't have known. It was. I broke the seal on it.
Blame the people at the jerky company, whoever made this.
But it was like, it was positioned just to see if it would happen. Like, I couldn't see, because from the other side, it looks fine. And, I don't check both sides, but why would you? I mean, it's like, what would I ever think? And so I'm like, I don't know. This jerky tastes a little furry to me. Mm. And then sure enough, the other side of it is just covered in, God only knows how much of that I ingested or what it's doing to my insides right now.
That's always disturbing when that happens, when you're like,
half a worm in this apple. Yeah. And then you're like, what is it? You know, what's happening inside me? So there you go. So if I start...
One of those was ahi tuna jerky. Did you try that
one? I had that. I consumed all of that.
Okay. Because I actually wanted to try tasting that.
Oh, it's too late.
Yeah, I know.
That ship has sailed.
My fault for not jumping on it.
Getting mold all over my keyboard.
In my house, the phrase we use for that is, it's like grapes.
I don't understand what that means.
One time I came out into the kitchen and my husband had left. We'd had a whole big bunch of grapes. And I went out into the kitchen, and all that was left, it was just sitting there. It was just this
stem.
This giant grape skeleton, with four grapes.
Awesome.
And so I asked him about it later. I said, okay, I want to know what the thought process was here, because you could have just not left me any grapes.
Right.
But instead you left me four.
It's like leaving 50 cents for the waitress. I didn't forget. I just don't care.
And then I said, and how is it that I don't get any of the grapes?
Yeah.
And he said, hey, it's grapes, baby. You got to move fast.
Okay, so it's sort of a fruity Chinatown.
Yeah, so now whenever there's a food that disappears quickly in our house, my husband usually just looks at me and goes, it's like grapes.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you by Castalia Language Center, based in downtown Portland, Oregon. Clara Greppel is the woman who founded, owns, operates, runs, is the overlord above Castalia Language Center, where they teach Spanish language to adults. It's not like they have anything against children as such. It's just that, we just curse them in their tiny, overpowered brains, because they don't. They're just like those flying brains in Futurama, where they just kind of, and they suck all the language out of books. Kids are like that with languages, where it's like you could just teach them. You could probably teach your kid to speak Pascal out loud somehow. You know, if you could just sort of, or whatever. Like, if you really wanted to and you wanted to put in the time. Anyway, adults just learn differently, so they hold class sizes to a maximum of 8 people, and it's 8 adults, which means you're going to be learning the same way, the same rate, same time, everybody else. And when I say everybody else, it's also, you're not going to put you in a class with, like, some brainiac adults either that are just brushing up. If you don't know any Spanish, guess what? You're going to be in a class with no more than 7 other people who don't speak any Spanish. Intermediate, same thing. If you're just brushing up, advanced, same thing. They'll also find a class that works with your schedule, be it the day of the week, at the time, or whatever. Please do tell me you heard it here. You can find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Hey, do you say in Spanish is .com just .com, do you suppose? I'm going to ask her that. We had to get her on the show and ask her.
I really don't know.
I wonder about that stuff. I know that they've got some damn French name for it in France, but nobody pays attention to that anyway.
They have
anyway.
A different word for everything, though.
Yeah. You can find out more about them, though, at, not the French, Castalia Language at PortlandSpanish.com. Tell me you heard it here on The Rick Emerson Show, the home of Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Zam!
A Cincinnati man was arrested Friday after he allegedly used a stripper pole during an assault. Police say 28-year-old Christopher Kilgore pushed one of his two lovers into a stripper pole at his house after she confronted him about his loose lips concerning their sexual relationship. Police said Kilgore struck one woman with his hand and then shoved another woman into the stripper pole at his home on River Road. Police claim the argument started when Kilgore told friends he was having sex with both girls at the same time. Police say Kilgore had just started sharing the bed as a group couple within the last week and a half. Kilgore told police both of the women had been hitting themselves to get red marks on their bodies.
I just don't even know who I side with here. I mean, I'm not advocating, of course, any sort of physical confrontation, but I'm saying just in terms of I don't even know who's dumber in this story. Because on the one hand, you know, guy, you got a good thing going. Don't blow that. I mean, it's you know, it's you've got hands you a Monet, you don't just spit on it. You don't just, you know, it, if a, you know, if a, there's a thing I'm going for there with the Louvre, and I don't know what it is, but yeah. The point is, you just don't ruin a good thing. On the other hand, if you're either one of these girls, first of all, you got to know that men are just dumb, just as dumb as the day is long. And if you and your girlfriend are, like, hooking up with this guy and it's like you got some whole three-way thing going all the time, like, he's gonna tell people. Like, that's just, you cannot, it's like when Heather Locklear, I can't believe Tommy Lee cheated on me. It's like, how dumb can you possibly be?
The guy has a stripper pole in his house. Really? You think he's not telling people that you're
thing.
All hooking up?
What is the point? Otherwise, I mean, I guess the point is the actual sexing, as the kids say. But, you know, like, guys, that's just, you know. And normally, see, here's the thing. Women think that guys talk about that kind of stuff all the time, and they don't. Women think that men just sort of, you know, can't keep their trap shut and are always talking about their sexual, you know, exploits if they have them or whatever, which really, in my experience anyway, is not the case with guys. Guys typically, they don't do that. Women, in my experience, do that a lot more than guys. And they talk about, like, the girth and the depth and the number of times and the whatever. And then he did this thing, and is that weird? And I wanted, is it how strange? It was just the pinky, and I didn't warn him, but so what? You know, it's like, whatever. You know, the guys typically don't, unless it's a thing like this, where guys are like, and then you will never get this. There's this other chick, and the chick's moving into the house with us, and it's going to be awesome, and we're all going to be humping, like, at the same time. It's righteous. And it's just because, like, how can you not tell someone? It's like winning the lottery, you know? But, like, you don't have a phone because you're so poor, and there's just, like, no one to tell it to. And so you would just be, like, shouting at the window, I won the lottery! Because you got to tell somebody. So that's, you know, they had to have known this guy. And again, stripper pole. So, and I mean, like, and can I also just say something that every guy is thinking? Two chicks who are going to move in with some dirtbag, and there's a stripper pole installed in the living room. Those are also the kind of chicks who cut themselves, so it's not like out of the realm of possibility they'd hit themselves. I mean, let's just speak the truth about that. Chicks who cut themselves will often, they often do all kinds of other things for which the blame is sort of spread around, rightly or wrongly. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A Florida couple thought they were...
I'm sorry, a couple where?
Florida. Thought they were buying a Halloween decoration at a yard sale, but it turns out they bought a real human skeleton.
Ba-bum-bum.
Judith and Mitchell Fletcher paid $8 for what they thought was a box of scary Halloween decorations at a yard sale in Brandon, Florida. When they got the box home, they realized they had bought real bones.
What kind of a yard sale was this? A graveyard sale? I don't understand.
I'm not sure. They actually called the sheriff's office. Detectives took the bones to the medical examiner, who determined they came from a professionally prepared human anatomical skeleton.
Was it a kid, did it say, or was it an adult? Or?
I think it was an adult, but it's the kind that was used in, you know, medical courses and stuff. So detectives are contacting colleges and universities to see if anyone is missing a skeleton.
Man, again, I don't mean to keep grinding on this, but it's like you didn't go to the Halloween bazaar. Which maybe is fortunate because you would have spent a lot of money and then you would have been filled with shame and regret, yeah, and whatever. But it was awesome. There was actually two different booths that were thinking about the selling, you know, skulls. And, you know, I have the actual skull, George, at home, the real one. And then I got this sort of, you know, like fake sort of half man, half beast skull. And then this guy was selling very, very realistic looking plaster and cement, I guess, casts. Is that the...
Yeah.
But, you know, made... But they were made from, like, the mold or whatever, yeah, a real skull. But I went this sort of arty way. I got one that it's just it's like a real-looking human skull in terms of shape, but then it's just painted. It's filled with a black, like, epoxy and then painted matte black. So it is... it just looks really, really cool. But I was looking around my office and just realizing my home office is just replete with skulls. I'm slowly kind of morphing into your place where it's just like Halloween, like all the time, which is great. And then I haven't put them up yet, but I brought up the Halloween decorations from the basement. And, you know, my brother came over to my house one time and it's like he walked in and it's like it was decorated for Halloween because that's what I do. And he expressed some sort of horror at that I was becoming, like, as he put it, like a tacky suburban person. He said, like, I just live in fear of, like, becoming like a knick-knacky suburban. And it's like I had to draw the distinction that I don't see, to me, like, and I get what he's saying about becoming one of those people where it's like you just get cutesy little, like, strawberry shortcake things hung up every, you know, for, you know, February 14th or whatever. But it's like Halloween is sort of different. I have no problem, and maybe you're this way too. I mean, your stuff is very sort of stylish and very, you obviously pick and choose. It's not even necessarily expensive, but you pick the right thing for the place. But for me, it's like I don't even care. For Halloween, it's like tacky, like, paper plates with, like, guys on them going, boo! Like, I don't, it doesn't matter. Like, it could be, I was at Fred Meyer last night and just buying, like, because I'm bringing in that cast iron jack-o'-lantern, which I didn't do today because I didn't have, I couldn't find a large-ish, what are those tea lights? But, you know, like a large electric candle.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't want to burn a candle in here. And, but I couldn't find a large electric one, and I want to put like 50 small ones in there. So, but I was like, well, I can't bring it in until there's a light. So it was like I couldn't bear to bring in the jack-o'-lantern here until it was properly decorated. So it was a Fred Meyer just wandering up and down like the aisle of just like tacky crap that I just love. As long as it's for Halloween or Christmas, I will just embrace tacky knickknacks like nobody's business. So I don't know how we got on this. Oh, the skeletons. So
yeah, see, that never happens to me. I just sort of, and I always hear, like, really, you called the sheriff's department? I would be like, woohoo, score, look at my bones.
Calling the Department of Awesome to go, well done. So, I mean, I have to make do with just the, you know, just the skull, and I'm never lucky enough. This is what I get for not calling dibs on all the skeletons my grandfather had when I was growing up.
By the way, the listener who called in to say that there was the big anatomical dummy kind of thing in the secondhand shop in Hawthorne, he went and checked it out. $695.
Yeah, do not want, not going to pay.
So I emailed him back and said, well, thank you so very much for thinking of me, but no, I don't have, I, no.
Well, that was your giveaway, that it was on Hawthorne, not at a Goodwill. If it was on 82nd, it would be $6. Yeah. On Hawthorne, though, it's like, you know, crap that, like, nobody wants or they don't want that much, like, suddenly becomes, you know, like $1,000. And it's, you know, no. So, that never happens to me either. And I wouldn't be calling the man about it either. I mean, I would, but maybe after I picked a few of the bones out for myself. Here's Don Taylor.
Firefighters rescued and arrested a drunken man who plunged into the Wisconsin River while chasing a one-legged goose. The 40-year-old man told officers he wanted to catch the bird and roast it.
How hard is it to catch a one-legged goose?
Well, if, as the police said about this man, you'd been drinking heavily, that could make it harder to catch a one-legged goose.
Okay. Nobody was really moving all that quickly, though, I would imagine.
He removed his shirt and shoes and jumped into the frigid water, where he was overcome by the cold and had to be rescued. He was then arrested on an outstanding warrant for bail jumping.
Okay. I was looking for a chance to say it was more like a mild goose chase, but that opportunity never presented itself.
No.
It's going to go on the pile of discarded thoughts. Well, let's do a couple more. Are you prepared with your pop culture authority?
I am indeed.
All right. So today's pop culture authority, by the way, is why was the movie E.T. given a PG rating? Why was the movie E.T., which, well, never mind. I was just going to say, I don't want to start a whole thing. we should have some sort of, you know what we should get in here? We should get like a chess clock for some of these.
Oh, that would be a good idea.
For not all, but sometimes, like when you and I, and this doesn't happen all that often, when you and I are both inclined to talk about something, which I think we would be here, but we both realize probably not a good idea to talk about it too long because, you know, got things to do. And we should get like some sort of a speed clock or maybe an egg timer that has a certain amount of. But then when it runs out, like, we have to stop.
I'll bet there's some kind of an app for your iPhone.
I have one. See? Secretly. we could test it here in just a moment if you'd like. Anyway, so today's... hold on a second. So today's today's pop culture authority, though, answers the question, why was the movie E.T. given a PG rating? And so we'll do that. We got the greatest songs ever, Geek Watch, all of that stuff on the way. But let's do a couple, then we'll get to pop culture authority. Here's Don Taylor.
Reaction continues over comments made by New York Republican gubernatorial candidate Carl Paladino. On Sunday, Paladino criticized gays, saying he didn't want children to be brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality is a equally valid or successful option compared to heterosexuality. He also had a warning for supporters of gay marriage.
I will veto all legislation that mocks our sacred institution of marriage and family.
I will eat your soul.
I will veto any gay marriage or civil union bill that comes to my desk.
I think you can file this guy, though, under people we don't need to care about after the end of this week. People who will not be troubling anyone.
He told a Brooklyn audience that homosexuality isn't equally valid with heterosexuality.
I just think my children and your children will be much better off and much more successful getting married and raising a family.
Also, I find
them
supple.
I don't want them to be brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality is an equally valid or successful
option. Yes, he doesn't want them to be brainwashed. Yes.
But he says he has nothing against gays and lesbians.
Don't misquote me as wanting to hurt homosexual people in any way. That would be a dastardly lie. My approach is live and let live.
Live and let live somewhere else, far from me, where I don't have to see you or your gayness.
Do you still have his thing from the Today Show?
You know, I can actually have that in just moments.
I could just listen to that over and over again.
This is the thing where he was talking to, it was Matt Lauer.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's like, you got to wonder, this is why it must suck to be a political advance man, because, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, I got him this prime spot on Matt Lauer. This is really, and he's calling all this, my boss is going to be a Matt Lauer. I got him that slot. No. This is when it all turns around for me. Listen to my boss doing such a great job today with the...
Young children should not be exposed to that at a young age. They don't understand. It's a very difficult thing. And exposing them to homosexuality, especially at a gay pride parade.
What happens
there? I don't
know
if you've ever been to one, but they wear these little Speedos and they grind against each other, and it's just a terrible thing.
Let me take
Why
the
would you bring your children to that?
That's awesome. All right. So I've got the app ready here. I created.
Okay.
How long should this tangent be? You just pick a. I've got it set for 1 minute.
Yeah,
I can
sure.
make it more or less.
Go for a minute.
But I think it's got some gay cricket sound or something at the end. It's because I couldn't.
Okay.
I haven't taken the time to. You know, here's the thing. It's like, this won't be a whole tangent of itself. It's just, I know this is a stupid American problem. Taking the time to load, like, custom sounds for everything on this iPhone is just a big drag. It's. I wish I could just think it. And I'm angry that I can't just think that. You know, Moonlight Sonata, and then just have it like appear. All right. All right. So I'm going to press start, and then we'll have 1 minute's worth of discussion on this issue. Are you ready?
Right.
All right. So here we go. All right. So today's pop culture authority is about the movie E.T. and why it wasn't given a PG rating. E.T., which in my opinion, like, isn't that good. And I didn't think it was good the first time I saw it as a kid when I was 10 and presumably like the prime audience for it.
I think it's really good in a manipulative sort of way, but I don't think it's especially good filmmaking, and it's certainly not the best, even close to the top of the best of Spielberg's movies.
Like, I don't get why it's become... I mean, it's Spielberg, and he makes decent movies. I mean, he's technically good all the time, but it's like, I don't get why it became, for a time anyway, like the highest-grossing motion picture of... Like, there's nothing in E.T. that warrants that, in my opinion.
I have no idea. I mean, he's a very good filmmaker, and he's very good at manipulating emotions, and you really get that in E.T. I mean, I don't really like the movie, and again, like you, I didn't like it the first time I saw it, and yet I found myself tearing up, because he's a master puppet master. You know, he's like, damn you, Spielberg, pulling my strings. So it still made me weepy.
He's a master puppet master.
Puppet master.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess it would help if we had the actual the alarm on, but it just rang there.
I
so
heard
that
it.
Actually okay. So it was sort of a cricketing thing.
Yeah, a little crickety noise.
Here's the thing: is you know, we both kept watching the timer though, and so you actually, if it hadn't been for my master puppet master thing, we actually would have just ended right at like 1 minute.
I was going to say master manipulator, I think, and I ended up saying master puppet master.
Okay, well that's the worst kind, Don. Yeah. All right.
And the puppet master, of course, was Elijah Wood's dancey dance when he was on Yo Gabba Gabba.
Also. No, I have nothing. I was going to go somewhere else with that, but I got nothing. All right, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We thank you for joining us. Still ahead later on today, Greatest Songs Ever Made, also Geek Watch. And in just moments, we have Don Taylor with Pop Culture Authority. Don't forget to get your Geek-O-Lantern submissions to contest@rickemerson.com. That is contest@rickemerson.com. You can see what's been submitted so far. Our good friend Todd the Corpse, actually, he's a good Christian. He has taken himself out of the running because he carved some sort of geek-themed jack-o'-lanterns last year.
Mm.
And he is sending me the photos just for demonstrative purposes, but he's not trying to pass them off as new because he's a good person. And it's one of the Beatitudes that thou shalt not like bogart the stuff from Think Geek. So I'm going to post those away. You can find that at rickemerson.com. That is at rickemerson.com. So don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Why is E.T. rated PG?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. In Roger Ebert's 1985 review of The Goonies, he wrote, "The single most important line of dialogue in any Spielberg movie is probably the line in E.T. when one kid calls another kid penis breath. The dialogue hears and acknowledges the precocious way that kids incorporate vulgarity into their conversations, especially with each other. The line in E.T. created such a shock of recognition that the laughs swept away any objections. The line is also significant because it assured that E.T. wouldn't be saddled with the dreaded G rating. The common belief among filmmakers, rightly or wrongly, is that G-rated films are perceived by ticket buyers as soft, saved. Bland. As with all things decided by the MPAA, who slapped the ratings on Hollywood movies, the rules are often rather arbitrary and even silly. Star Trek the Motion Picture was rated G, despite a couple of graphic deaths due to a transporter malfunction. Planet of the Apes, another G-rated film, was full of violence and featured Charlton Heston saying, "Damn dirty ape," and "God damn you all to hell." Plus, there was a shot of Heston's bare ass. Today, movie makers are aware of the marketing impact of ratings, so much so that they'll add dialogue or later edit their films down to suit the MPAA's whims, just so they can get the rating they desire. Ang Lee's 1995 adaptation of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility avoided a G rating by inserting some profanity into the background of a ballroom scene. M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening was heavily marketed as his first R-rated film, despite there being little on-screen violence and no sex or nudity. There was, however, one use of the word pussy. Which brings us back to E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Steven Spielberg wanted a broader audience for his movie and didn't want to be hamstrung by a G rating, which would create the perception that E.T. was a children's movie. So he inserted some mild, raunchy humor. One kid making a joke about Uranus and Elliot calling his sister penis breath. It was enough to get a PG rating. Ironically, the penis breath line was excised for a later release of the film, the same one where Spielberg digitally replaced the soldiers' guns with walkie-talkies. But then it was restored for the 20th anniversary re-release in 2002, which may say something about changing attitudes toward profanity, or about marketing, or it could just mean that Steven Spielberg can't make up his mind.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Let you go.
And that's how you segue right there. You kids. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Just apropos of nothing, I had this email I was going to read. Somebody, and I don't know why, somebody mentioning to me what song they want to have played at their funeral. And it was somebody, I don't think for any reason, for which any reason was given. It was because of Jenny. So we had listener Jenny in doing the top five Pearl Jam songs, you know, or, you know, sort of lesser known Pearl Jam songs last week. Jenny mentioned the Pearl Jam song she wants at her funeral. Reminded me of the same thing I've been planning for years. When I die, hey, you know, I was mentioning something like this earlier. When I die, it says, I want to be burned on a giant funeral pyre, Viking style, while either the main theme or the end theme, So Long Goodbye, from Terminator 2 plays. That's the piece that plays as John is lowering the T-800 in the vat of molten iron because it's not allowed to self-destruct. Just so you know. All right, here you go. The idea, really, of a guy being burned on a funeral, and it would be a guy, being burned on a funeral pyre while the main theme from Terminator 2 plays is sort of the greatest thing ever. It almost, in, there's no way to put this, it doesn't sound weird. It almost makes me root for your death just a tiny bit, really, or just, you know, for the hastening of your death. Sort of a musical tontine. Anyway.
My grandmother always said that she wanted a Viking funeral. Well, the thing about my grandmother is you have to kind of imagine in your head she was a chain smoker and loved cocktails. She was the kind of older woman that enjoyed hanging out at like Trader Vic's.
Sort of a Lucille, Trader Vic's, sort of a Lucille Bluth.
Yeah, very Lucille Bluth. She had, when I was growing up, she had one of those giant brandy snifters full of matchbooks from all of the different nightclubs.
Now, the many bars in which I've consumed alcohol.
So, and she also had many, many gay friends. I grew up surrounded by gay men. And at one point, something came up about Viking funerals. And using the colloquial phrase for a British phrase for a bundle of sticks that were used for the Viking funerals, my grandmother would always say that she wanted to be laid out on a pile of faggots and then set on fire and set adrift down the river.
Okay. I know that that's not the sort of thing I'm supposed to laugh at, because you sort of, you know, you gave a pre-deflation of the double entendre, but it sounds like that may have been intentional, if she was, in fact, that was, you know. Was she saying it was like a laugh line, a sort of like a Rosemary Clooney kind of a...
Oh, yeah. I mean, sitting there with the cigarette in her hand going, I'm going to be set on fire on top of a pile of faggots.
I can totally see that. It wasn't Rosemary Clooney that did the... Who was the woman that
Rose
did...
Rosemarie from Dick Van Dyke? Because my grandmother was kind of a little bit like Rosemarie.
Who's the... I'm such a retard that I can't think of my frame of reference is so often, like, the least possible work of any artist. It was like, you know, you just find, like, a pile of the lesser things they've done, and then the thing of which they are most ashamed, that will be my frame of reference. You know, for like Adam West. You're that guy from Maxim Zool. You know, or whatever. Who was the chick that did the? Polydent? It was a thing. It was a thing where you'd like put
that
your.
That was Rosemary Clooney. Yeah.
You put your teeth in a glass and then you drop some tablets in it. And it goes, and the bubbling action just takes the sediment away.
Yeah, I believe she did do Polydent ads in the 70s.
Your grandmother is now. That's who I'm now picturing. And like in a big, like in a Mrs. Roper house dress, covered with little cigarette burns, and she's like chain smoking her way.
Actually, my grandmother was very stylish. She was actually very, very. So I have this. I'll bring this photograph. I have this photograph of myself as a baby, a toddler, being held outside some church service by my grandmother, who is wearing this like white coat with this giant faux ermine collar and a giant matching hat, and she's holding like small me, and it's like, yeah, she's like this sort of almost Cruella de Vil kind of a character.
Was she that kind of, because I've seen this happen occasionally, was she that kind of, stylish older woman, though, where the older she got, it was like a little squiggle visioned, where like the lipstick was on, not quite correctly, a little bit, you know, like maybe some on the teeth, or just a little slanty.
Yeah. Yeah, still wearing bright red lipstick, and it's just a little bit outside the lines.
Just a little bit of Requiem for a Dream,
you know,
style
makeup.
The
hair is very carefully put into place with like a layer of Aquanet.
And that's where you understand why children are so frequently afraid of old people, because you're some kid in a bassinet, everything is weird. And then suddenly this leering clown-like face comes into focus. And who's my little man? Look at you. You know, and to a kid, you just...
It just reeks of dime store hairspray and cheap perfume and cigarettes.
Called New York Night. All right, you're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. I was speaking of cheap dime store stuff. So I watched Eastbound and Down last night. Chapter 9 of 12 so far. So it was, episode 3 of season 2. God damn, that show is fantastic. It's so great. It's so great that it just And here's the thing about Eastbound and Down is that I have now, because we had a whole television discussion of the show yesterday, because I was like the last person in America. I hadn't seen the Banksy open to the Simpsons. Because I usually doesn't matter, but I usually get up and I should do that page like a cloud, as you said, and that you can kind of see what people are sort of talking about. And I'll use that as a sort of guideline to figure out if there's something I need to watch before the show because it was notable in some way. Like, I never watched Jimmy Fallon, but it's like when he and Timberlake did that whole history of rap thing, which was awesome. I knew about it because it was like everybody in the world is talking about this, and it was that, and I went and watched it. So I watched the Simpsons Banksy thing at your recommendation. And then I forget how I was getting to this, but we had a conversation about Eastbound and Down, and you were talking about the laugh line of, you know, well, you're what, the king of freaking mustaches or whatever. And so I'm sitting there watching it last night and just thinking, you know, not unlike the Simpsons couch gag, which for many people, and that's, I think, how it all kind of came together in my head, is like this last Sunday's The Rest of the Simpsons, which I eventually watched, was sort of, you know, it wasn't bad. It was kind of good the way the Simpsons is good now. You know, it was like... It was sort of smile funny, not laugh funny. It's good. It's good like a. It's good like a close friend. You know that isn't all that interesting, but that you kind of known forever. You know, and so you know it's a sort of easy familiarity of something you have had for a long time, and that is usually not flat out awful.
Yeah, pre South Park and pre Seth MacFarlane, that opening would have been really shocking.
Yeah.
And really had teeth.
And for good or bad, like South Park is sort of a victim of its own success in the sense that it has changed the landscape around it so substantially that now it doesn't stand out. Just like, for good or bad, Nirvana changed the landscape to some degree, and therefore everything just sounded like Nirvana and nothing. So therefore they didn't sound like themselves. Playboy magazine, same thing. You know, sort of a cultural jailbreak and re-levels the playing field. And so, you know, so Hefner no longer was this sort of revolutionary. He didn't appear that way because he... You know, it created a whole genre of whatever. So, but the couch gag is now the thing that people just sort of watch, because that is the part of the show that sometimes reflects the most creativity. You know, the thing about Eastbound and Down is just what they used to call on the West Wing a hyperkinetic opening sequence, which is the walk and talk up and down the hallway where then, and with Josh Lyman going, well, I guess it's going to be one of those days. And then, like, you'd hear the wow, and then that Snuffy Walden theme would come in. It is that way on Eastbound and Down, where I wait for the title card to come up when it just like flies at the screen and it has that piano and the little like Doobie Brothers guitar line. And it's usually as someone's being hit in the jaw or like somebody is being like paddled on the ass or something has exploded. And then it just says like Eastbound and Down. And I think it was the second episode of this season where, goddamn, where Stevie is with the black hooker and... And they will do this thing on Eastbound and Down, which I realize is a show that's watched by like four people. But you know what? Look, here's the thing. Can we just be honest here? As one cult program talking about another cult program, you ought to be watching this, if only so you can be revulsed by it enough to explain why you don't like it and not going to watch it anymore, which is kind of my wife's thing. But that second episode, it's like nothing really even happens. They will sometimes, the great thing about Eastbound and Down is they will just, for long periods of time, find some horrific image and then just let it continue for like 2 minutes, it seems like. And you're just watching it going, please, God, spare me any further. Like, you're raping my eyes.
Yeah, the beginning of this episode was basically all about Stevie walking around in a thong.
God damn. And in Kenny's thong, which he was soiled and he got out of a hamper. And he goes, don't you mean the grapes and bananas, Kenny? No, I just see the grapes there, partner. But that second episode where Kenny is just, he's nailing some black hooker from behind, he makes the obligatory, like, you know, some sort of, you know, stirring that chocolate reference, and you're just watching going, Jesus Christ, what am I? And then she's so bored and listless as she's getting nailed by this loser. And then as he, I can't even believe this, as he reaches the moment of fulfillment, said hooker just says, like, in the most flat, uninspired tone ever, she's like, that's right, baby, you get return on that dollar. And then it just, and if you'd cut to me in the chair, I would have been making the, that sort of face that Beavis would occasionally make when he was frightened by something, and he would just kind of go, ha! And then it was just like, eastbound and down on the screen, and I was just like, it's like being punched, you know, right in the face by that guy every single week when the show opens. But it's so brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's so, I want to strap all of America to a chair, like Clockwork Orange style, and just force them to watch that series. Even if they would hate it, just to make them, like, this is how you make a television show.
The thing I love about the show, but also just, you'd say the same thing about the show in general that I was about to say about Danny McBride. What I love about Danny McBride is he's a genius at a very specific kind of comic timing and improv. But at the same time, the thing that makes him so hilarious is that he's absolutely fearless.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there is nothing calculated. He is not thinking about his image. He's not thinking about how he's going to come off to the public. He's playing this character, and he's absolutely fearless in
oh, he's going to get the laugh.
Whatever it takes.
Well, it's like, you know, there's some of those, and nobody really springs to mind. Actually, that's a lie. Lots of people spring to mind. Jim Carrey, Will Ferrell. And I like Will Ferrell. I really do. He's a funny guy. Seems like a nice guy. Legitimately funny and talented. But so Jim Carrey is probably one of the best examples of this. But, you know, but like hack comics are always like this. All hack comics have this trait of, even when they are doing a character, They go out of their way to make sure that, you know, it's really just them doing that character. This is just me, Rob Schneider, being the stapler or, yeah, you know, whatever. And you're right that Danny McBride, he doesn't care if you were just horrified or if he looks silly or strange. It's like his goal is, like, he's got a job to do.
Yeah.
And the job is to beat Kenny Powers in a way that's going to make you laugh or be disgusted or whatever. And he just does it balls out.
Yeah. As much as I didn't really care for Chris Farley, that was one thing when people would compare Chris Farley to John Belushi.
Mm-hmm.
That was a similarity as well, is that they had this ability to just completely throw themselves just 100% at what they were doing and just not care.
God, when the sequence was a couple episodes ago when Kenny's got the ludicrous cornrows in. And he says, well, I guess there comes a time and you got to be your own man or whatever. And he, like, takes the pick and he picks out the cornrows. And then he, like, comes into frame. And Jody Hill does this great thing where he, like, frames him like he's the hero. But then he's just got, I mean, there's just no other way to say it. He's just got this insane, like, buckwheat hair, like, going,
yes,
in, like, five different directions. And then he's, like, looking at a donkey that he's painted to look like a zebra because he's trying to bilk the locals out of money. And then he's hosing a donkey with this insane hair that's sticking straight up like Yahoo Serious. And I was just thinking,
And he's so angry at everyone around him for not taking his need to get back into to regain his level of fame,
God,
you know, as seriously as he is.
Jesus. I mean, it's just, it really is. And yet, this is the final thing I'll say about it, and we gotta move on. But the final thing, though, is, for me anyway, is that, and yet, somehow, like, improbably, despite, like, every law of nature and man and whatever, he somehow, two seasons in a row now, has made you believe that a chick would have sex with him.
An incredibly hot chick.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I know intellectually it's unlikely, but I somehow buy it. Like, I suspend the disbelief, which doesn't seem.
I bought it with April a little bit more than I'm buying it with this character. I'm going along with this, but it's unbelievable.
I don't know. For me, it's like every time you see a sitcom where it's like fat guy and hot wife in Brooklyn and whatever, and you're like, you know. But this is like, I guess, especially with April because she's such a hick, I just unflinchingly was like, okay, I get it. So.
Anyway. Well, we've talked about how, incredibly, like, sort of cinematic,
yeah,
and feature film like this movie is. And this particular episode ended with just the weirdest sequence where they're all riding on the
coaster.
Carnival rides,
yeah,
with this weird, solemn music that makes it sound like something terrible is,
yeah,
about to happen. But, well, it's just them riding on carnival rides.
Well, it's like one of those things that, and I mean, I'm not trying to get inside Jody Hill's head or anything. What do I know? But I suspect that he is a filmmaker who just edits a lot by, not that he doesn't know what he's talking about, but and that he's not skilled, because a lot of times people think that, like, schooling is bad, or, you know, like, there's that whole, like, I didn't go to film school, I went to films, you know, which is, like, a lot of times just results in bad movie making. But I suspect a lot of times he just knows that things work for reasons he can't explain. Like the end of Observe and Report, where I always go back to, it ends with just Seth Rogen cutting back to an earlier scene from the movie where he's at a firing range, like, for no reason, but it totally works. I don't know if you remember, in the first season of Eastbound and Down, there was actually a sequence. That show is so hard to predict. There was a sequence where actually Kenny Powers, where he just sobbed. And it wasn't like comedic, funny, laughing, sobbing. Yeah. He was like, because he was just thinking he was never going to get back on top. He's going to sit down and out forever. And he was just crying alone in his bedroom at night, not played for humor. And they never referred to it. It was just done as a standalone thing. So they kind of screw with you every now and again. How great was it, though, when he's talking to the girl and he's, you know, what you know, taking it slow paid off badly in the past, so we're going to take it fast. And then her son is sitting right there, and he's like 14, and he goes, you know, and you're not going to be ignored anymore either. You know, you're going to matter for once, finally, to all of it, to her. And you know, and he's just such a colossal boob. I mean, he's just such an insensitive dick, you know, but in this life-loving sort of way. Anyway, so you got to watch it. It's Eastbound and Down. You know, just watch it. That's all I have to say. All right, at the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Los Angeles County, who is going to try and keep better track of the 9,500 food trucks that they have, is laying down some new rules. And what the New York Times sees as the ultimate sign that this fattiest of food fads is going mainstream, Los Angeles is going to force its roving vendors to comply with the same health department regulations as restaurants. Food truck operators will have to display the letter grade earned at their most recent inspection and let city officials know where they tend to set up shop.
Now, isn't that, but didn't they have to do that already? Well, I guess not. I mean, I guess by definition, because Likas was talking about this. He was hugely opposed to this regulation, that he felt it was a thinly veiled way to crack down on certain segments of the community who disproportionately operate food carts in Los Angeles and whatever. And I don't know if that's true or not, but he was massively opposed to this. So I never knew what became of it. So this actually is going now to be the case that you'll have to... But that's what they have to do here, right? Like Lisa Bryan said that. I don't know if they have to display the letter grade or whatever, but they get inspected, and if they fail, they get inspected more often, and they have to be whatever, so...
Yeah, we have a fairly strict health department regulations about the sale and handling of all food here, which is actually pretty good. I mean, the health department is kind of sketchy as far as, like, getting their inspectors out and when they inspect and that sort of thing, because they're grossly understaffed. But the regulations are actually pretty much uniform for every operation.
So it's not like a draconian sort of, like...
No.
Food carts don't... It's not some thing where they get screwed, like, disproportionately or, you know, to a greater degree than restaurants.
No, they still have to... They have to follow basically the same things, you know, as far as the temperature of the refrigerator, the temperature of the freezer. You have to have a three-compartment sink for washing and rinsing and sterilizing. You have to have water that reaches a certain temperature of heat. So, you know, so it's actually all pretty much the same for everybody here. The New York Times said that previously officials are going to try to regulate food trucks in a city that is the symbol of the Wild West ethos of the food trucks. Inspectors will be able to shutter food trucks that don't score at least a C, and if that's not establishment enough, the Times says, food trucks whose allure has been enhanced by their mysterious comings and goings, some signaled by puffs of Twitter postings, because that is the hot new thing, is for trucks to drive around a city and then say on Twitter what neighborhood they're going to, so people will, you know, have to go to that neighborhood to, like, you know, be there when the truck shows up.
So they're like the gorillas of lunch. Like, they strike and then they vanish back into the... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now they're going to have to file route maps with the health department and to facilitate at least one field inspection.
Well, see, that's just taking away. That's stripping away the allure. That's just removing their mystique. See, even, you know, that's... I mean, I guess I got no problem with them making sure they're not serving you, like, a thing full of trichinosis or whatever, but I mean... Yeah. But I mean, people got to market, you know? A brother got to eat, literally and figuratively. So it's like, you know, whatever. That's just one of those things where I always wonder if the restaurant industry goes out of their way to try to get the food carts kind of screwed via the man. Not unlike, and I say this only because it's true. This is not said from a place of whatever. Not unlike how the National Association of Broadcasters, which is the lobbying arm of the terrestrial, you know, the radio industry, among other things, has gone out of their way to make sure that penalties and fines and costs associated with internet broadcasting are onerous, to say the least. So I didn't know if that was like, so-called real restaurants sort of use their influence to get these guys kind of shafted.
It's quite possible. I mean, the guy who owned Greek Casino downtown started early and often railing against the food carts that were popping up in his neighborhood, saying it was destroying his lunch business. Then eventually he went out of business, and a lot of the reason he went out of business was because he was not you know, meeting his health code.
Also, his restaurant was filled with douchebags all the time.
And his building physically was, like, falling apart.
Hey, what happened to the octopus, though?
I just saw the octopus. It's out in the suburbs somewhere.
That's a terrifying thing. Now I'm just picturing it striding across Tualatin.
It's on Barber somewhere. It's on the top of some building in Barber. I just actually saw it last week.
So he must have sold it to somebody or somebody else, because that was my whole thing. Is I was like, I didn't care about that guy. F him. I was just caring. You know, I was like, what about the octopus though? I just pictured it being shoved into like a warehouse somewhere and sadly forgotten about.
No, I mean somebody in the text box or something might be able to tell us via email. But yeah, it's out on Barber someplace.
So it says, yes, I stayed out of the building more for the douchebags than for the food. I mean, you know, the food was, you know, it was what it was. I never had any. It wasn't especially good or bad. I never had any problem with it. It's just just one of those things. It's like just you know, the clientele. It was like just guys who just came from like waxing their chest and like a wash in some terrible cologne. You know, like it was even those guys who like in the early days that were buying a lot of Axe body spray. You know, and it's like and dating girls named Monique. Anyway. I'm just saying, this is just my assessment of that. I could be way off. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. We were talking about Eastbound and Down. Here's the thing. Do we all agree that as amusing as Kenny Powers might be on television, as he has many, many Hispanic adventures, as Stevie says, you don't really want to be that guy. You don't want to be the guy who turns to one of his teammates on the baseball team and says, hey, can I get an El Bolo? You don't want to... And look, and I'm not saying you are that guy, Don. I'm not saying you would be. I try not to be that guy. I just, you know, whether I am fluent in whatever the languages or not. But sometimes in the back of your head, don't you kind of feel like you are just by dint of not speaking the language? Mm. You know, like when you're sort of, because you picture the rest of the world going, all right, American, I guess I will shift into your language, even though you are in my country. Hold on one second while I think down to your level. You know, they taught me 7 languages in finishing school. It's that thing where, like, and can look, here's another thing. And maybe we're not supposed to say, I don't know if this is, I never know what's PC and what's, it doesn't matter. Maybe this is the wrong reason to learn a language, but it doesn't really matter. The Czechs spend the same regardless. It doesn't really matter why you're learning, I suppose. But here's the thing. If you're going into, you know, whether it's a country or it's a community or a restaurant where, you know, it's a Spanish-speaking thing primarily, if you're able to converse fluently in Spanish, you look like a badass. I mean, there's just no getting around that. You just look like 10 times cooler than if you're just some, you know, just some other lamoid going, taco? How do you say 2 tacos? And the guy just, the guy behind the counter sort of with like a barely concealed sigh of just, you know, irritation just goes, you say 2 tacos. I speak English. You know, you go, okay, 2 tacos. Por favor. Hey, you're trying to impress, saying por favor at the end, which impresses like no one. So you want to be the guy who goes in and is able, you know, speaks the language, you speak it well, and then your date says, well, how multicultural and learned you are. And you say, well, it's a little something I picked up on the continent. Would you like to ride in my fine Buick, which has a dashboard made out of eagle beak, or whatever? You know, and then it's like you look fantastic. So, you can find out more about all of this, except perhaps the eagle beak part, at portlandspanish.com. That is the website for Castalia Language Center. Castalia Language Center. Clara Grebel is the woman who runs Castalia Language Center. It's in downtown Portland. She's from Argentina. She speaks Spanish. You know, it's her native tongue. She speaks English, of course, American. So you will go there. You walk in speaking English. But eventually, you will walk out speaking Spanish. And you will walk out speaking Spanish conversationally, colloquially. You're going to go places. And you know what? You're not going to sound like some guy just fell off the Berlitz truck. You know, with some weird stilted sort of wooden, you know, delivery that just... You might as well just paint rube on your head. You know, you don't want to do that.
Como esta, sir?
But really, it's like you feel like Eric Idle with, you know, like in the... So this restaurant will offer conversations for you in multiple languages. Like, you know, and it's like you just live in fear as an American. It's like everywhere you go that you just have a big, like, you know, like a scarlet A on your head. But it's like, you know, but it's like a really tacky A. Like an A with Mickey Mouse ears on top. You know, and it just says, hi, I'm a numbskull. So you don't want to be that. Lara, by the way, is telling everybody she's from Canada, which I think is a thing that more and more people do.
Yeah, it is. People actually will put, like, Canadian flags on their backpacks and such so that... not an American. Okay, I don't hate you.
Well, you know, and she, and you know, I wouldn't say that she speaks it absolutely conversationally, but she speaks enough Spanish now. She's going to Madrid after her sojourn in Istanbul. She's going to Madrid, and she will totally be able to. And it's like she can pass like she's from Spain, But she's also going to be able to open her mouth without just feeling like she's, you know, stumbling her way toward the light switch in the middle of the night. So you don't want to do that. You can find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And please do us a favor and tell them you heard about it right here at the Emerson News Network. That is Castalia Language Center.
You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I have a brand new story that just appeared on the intranet.
Is this breaking news?
Let's call this breaking news.
Wait, hold on a second.
It happened over the weekend, but it just appeared. So
it's not really breaking news so much as a story you just uncovered from like beneath a stack of things.
The fine folks at KPTV just offered it up. So.
Right.
A 61-year-old woman attacked a Portland police officer with a meat cleaver over the weekend. Officers Michael Filbert and Brent Maxey were called to an apartment in the 8100 block of Southeast Mill Street on Sunday at 1:15 a.m. to check on the welfare of a woman who was reported to be naked and shouting nonsense. A neighbor told Filbert and Maxey the woman was acting strange and pushed out a window screen from her second-floor apartment. While Maxey went to pick up the screen, Filbert went to the woman's apartment and could hear a vacuum running inside. Filbert knocked on the door, identified himself as an officer, and began a short conversation with the woman. Filbert told the woman they had brought her window screen back and they set it against her door. Shortly after the woman thanked the officers, they heard a loud crashing noise inside the apartment. The door swung open. The police said she was holding a large meat cleaver as she yelled, "Die, effers!"
Did anyone die?
No, she slashed the cleaver at one of the cops, and actually she hit him between his radio holder and left hip, narrowly missing his body. He drew his gun as Maxey pointed a taser at the woman. Both officers ordered her to drop the cleaver. She continued to swing wildly until she became caught up in the window screen that had been set against her door.
Jesus.
And
how old is she?
61.
Well, I mean, still able to swing an axe. So, you know. All right. Well, there you go.
And eventually, they calmed her down as she was taken into custody. She told the officers, "Thank God you're here. They've been coming to kill me all day."
Okay, sounds like it was mutual. Cleaver.
I barely knew her.
Okay. There you go. So that's sort of breaking news right there. That's the.
I just like to hear the breaking news music.
I love this music.
Yeah.
This is from the now defunct, I think, Mutual Network from eons ago, from back in my day.
Mm.
All right. This is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show, that's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen, on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Geek Watch.
MTV is joining forces with Stan Lee's POW Entertainment to create a new digital comic series called The Seekers. Lee said in an interview, "It involves superheroes. It involves a very high concept plot. It's a story such as you have never seen before, and it spans the centuries."
This seems implausible, if not just flat out deceptive, like on every level, that Stan Lee is coming up with something that's unlike anything I've seen before.
Lee went on to say The Seekers is more than just a comic. It's actually the start of a tremendous franchise.
Isn't The Seekers the Western, The Seekers? Presumably not, if it's not like anything I've seen.
I think The Searchers.
The Searchers is what I'm thinking. Okay, so it's not. Okay.
He hopes The Seekers will grow into a TV series or film. First, though, it has to be written and illustrated. MTV will hold a contest to find an undiscovered writer and artist to work on the new comic series.
So let me understand this. It has to exist first. So all of those things will happen, but it doesn't actually, it's not extant at the moment. Okay.
The 87-year-old comics legend said he's excited to work in the digital arena. "It's thrilling because it's a whole new discipline," he said. "But it's a funny thing. Whether it's electronic, whether it's digital, whether it's on paper, whether it's on a television screen, it's the story that counts. You don't let the fact there's a different area of exhibition change the fact you need a great story." The Seekers will be available for free on the new MTV Geek website.
Are you kidding me?
That launched earlier this week.
It's a great fanfare, I guess.
The site will offer comics, horror, sci-fi, and gaming news, as well as coverage of comic book conventions and previews of new comic books, games, and movies.
Can you just show us endless shots of Jessica Alba wearing that Han shot first shirt? Because that never fails to impress me. By the way, like 1,000 people in text. It's the searchers. Don't be retarded. All right, sorry.
MTV Geek.
Yeah, I'm not ever going to go there. No, I'm not going to go there. Yeah. Well, see, now I feel like I have to go there, but I don't want to.
I'm not sure if it's just sad or if it's annoying or...
It's just annoying, and here's the thing. It's kind of annoying, but it's also... Like, I take it personally. I won't presume to speak for everybody, but it's like I long ago... Okay, and there's no way to do this. I apologize. It sounds like I'm name-dropping, so there's no way to do it without that. But the John Rogers, the leverage guy, he's been on Outlook Portland a couple times. And we had him on twice. It was one of the first or the second time. And of the many, many times he and I have hung out together. But we were talking about, I don't know, geek stuff somehow, geek culture, whatever. And one of the questions was, you know, because Leverage has, you know, a lot of like references to geek culture and made in a way that you could tell it was by somebody who knew what they were talking about. Like it wasn't a sort of token reference. I mean, it was, you know, you watch that show and, you know, the references aren't omnipresent, but you could tell that, you know, there was somebody with knowledge of the culture sort of behind it. But we were talking about something or other, but I asked about, you know, the idea of having to explain, you know, the geek references to people. Did they have to fight to get them into the show? And anyway, but he was just noting, that the only people who didn't get the geek references sometimes were the actual heads of the network because they live this very isolated existence. And he said, but you know, the other thing, he's like, that's our deal. He's like, the problem is we have to explain to the guys who own the network that like everybody in the entire world now. You know, like has embraced, like geek culture just is culture. Yeah. And he said, you know, they don't understand it, but he's like, you know, if they would get out of their sort of encapsulated lifestyle, they would realize that it has taken over the entire world. And he then, basically the point is he went into this big monologue about how, you know, he knows guys that are still like all bent out of shape about, you know, that they still perceive that there's this sort of weird nerd misfit, like picked on dynamic with so much of the geek culture, which will probably never totally go away, but it doesn't go away the way that like the way that that fractures divides between any two cultures never entirely go away. But it's like so much different than it was 20 years ago. Yeah. The idea that you're going to get your ass beat because you're reading comics or have a computer or you're playing a role-playing game or whatever. It's not like playing a role-playing game is necessarily, going to get you laid, but it's going to get you laid a lot more than it would have, you know, back then, and at least not be a preventative in that way.
I think if you actually at some point have to look back in history and pinpoint the precise moment at which the word geek absolutely incontrovertibly no longer meant what it used to mean, it would be the minute that MTV Geek launched on the web. I mean, at this point, it's like...
Maybe. It's just that a geek used to be interchangeable with dork.
Yeah.
And it split into... So now there's the nerd, dork, geek, you know.
But as soon as MTV goes, okay, all of this is cool enough and popular enough that we are going to have a website devoted to
right,
it.
Right.
It does. It no longer means what it used to mean.
Yeah, I guess. And as like I said, maybe that's one of those conversations that I could probably have. And you're probably right or not. But it's to me, it's like it is now. It's like it's just become such a large canvas, or such a large backdrop, I guess, for our culture that it's like it's almost so large that it is unimportant because it is blocked out to the sun. It's so large you can't even take it in. And so I just sort of accept it as like just a paradigm shift. It's a binary state that everything now is filtered through the geek culture, and that is rock and roll was, you know, sort of an outsider's kind of music and marked a split between generations. You know, but it's like, you know, you see some guy from the Eagles on television hawking like a Time Life box set, you know, that contains songs by the MC5. And it's like, you go, well, that, okay. I mean, that's either good or bad, but it's certainly not what it was.
There's also something just very, very sad whenever you see like a multi-billion dollar concern like MTV jump on the bandwagon of something as the curve is already starting to curve downwards. Like, you know, that... Could you have waited any longer
right.
to decide this was a trend?
Well, that's the thing. But I would disagree that the curve is actually trending downwards. It's just that the trend, because downwards implies that the geek influence on mainstream culture is now diminishing. And I don't think that's the case. I think it is, in fact, there is no curve. It's filled the entire screen. I think it's sort of like in Microsoft Paint. It's like, you know, when you're using whatever the little pencil, like the little fine point brush, and you're putting little black dots, and then you accidentally click that thing that's the bucket spilling of paint, and you go blah, and it's just like the whole screen goes. It all went puce. That I think is what happened with geek culture. It in fact it is so prevalent and so pervasive and is such an influence on modern culture that by definition you cannot calculate geek culture's impact anymore, because that presumes that you have the two to contrast against each other. And there is no longer geek culture and regular culture. One has become the other. And so it really is like, you know, it is the puppet eating the puppet master, one might say. So there's not even a point of comparison, because it's just consumed all the other culture. All the other cultural, the other culture now resides inside geek culture, as though it were in the pit of Sarlacc being digested over 1,000 years. And stuff. And whatever. I got to go to MTV. Is it Geek MTV or MTV Geek?
MTV Geek.
I'm going there right now. This is like when that, was it the Jetta, where they had that horrible billboard campaign for the, no, it was the Neon, the Plymouth Neon, the Dodge Neon, whatever, that car, the Neon. And it was the billboard, and it was the worst billboard campaign ever. It was a picture of a Neon, which is just like a boring little car, nothing bad, just a boring car, little sedan. But they had this faux spray paint, and somebody had spray painted a jagged pink pseudo mohawk over the car, and the tagline, I swear to God, I'm not making this up, it's one of the most famous failed advertising campaigns ever. They teach this literally at the Harvard Business School now. And the tagline for the car with the spray-painted mohawk on the billboard above it was, "It's like punk rock, but it's car." Yeah. There you go. MTV Geek. So I would say... I'm right here, right now. So I would say that geek sort of has gone through the thing that rock and punk have gone through in terms of terms. Now, MTVGeek.com is just a GoDaddy site. So maybe is it geek?
Actually, MTV.com/geek.
This is a lot of work. MTV.com/geek. Well, that proves, by the way, that they're not really.
Serious about it. They didn't even get the domain.
They would have spring $9 for a GoDaddy. Okay, well, you know, this just looks like they've stolen Aaron's site. I mean, that's really what this is. Somebody just saw Geek in the City and went, steal that in a way we can't be sued for. That really is this. This is just sort of a collection of links to other things.
Yeah.
Not that Aaron's site is that, but I'm saying that's the content. And it just looks, okay, I've done caring about this.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the thing, is like, I can't even really be annoyed by it. Like, I just sort of... And I guess this is the point in the conversation where I'm supposed to say, like, well, this means we've won, you know, whatever. But it's like, sure. But I guess the thing about being the winner is, like, you don't even really have to care about being the winner. That's the thing. Like, I don't feel like I have to sort of spike the ball. And I'm not trying to, like, be the guy, like, carrying the banner for all whatever. Because there's, let's be honest, I mean, this call was, this guy's way, way nerdier than I am in this world. So, it's the thing where you're supposed to go like, and now we are, it's our time now, and which is true. But as a result, like, I don't have to dwell on it. I can just sort of wake up every day, and live in a world that's much more awesome than it was 20 years ago. Because, say it along with me now, one of the maxims of this program, the past sucks. Nothing good about it. Present, always better. Today, better than yesterday. Tomorrow, better than today. That's just the way it is. Now, page two. Are we done with our Geek Watch?
That will be the end of the Geek
Watch.
There's
your Geek Watch.
By Grapthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
I think Bobby actually wrote a blog post. I know, maybe it was like a MySpace post or something a long time ago. He was, when he was writing a lot of those things. But it was a thing about how he was talking to a friend of his, and the friend was like, 39. And was talking about some, in the present tense, some, like, ongoing, like, geek versus jock, like, rivalry. And not in, like, a kooky way. Like, in some, like, it was really impacting his life, the fact that jocks didn't respect geeks. And Bobby was just like, you're, like, 40. And also you have a job and you're married, so maybe you could grow up just the tiniest little bit and just, sort of go home and, enjoy, like, your Wi-Fi and your iPad and appreciate the fact that, like, it sort of worked in your favor eventually. So speaking of, having said that we were going to close out the geek talk and that I wasn't going to be that guy.
And apparently you lied.
I lied. It was all deceit. Okay, so now I just sound like I'm full of crap because now I'm making, like, a niche geek reference.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Did you see the greatest, was that somebody's phone? And by somebody, I mean Don Taylor.
Is that my phone?
I think my phone is turned off. And I think my phone was the Arrested Development theme anyway. It doesn't sound like that was that.
I think that was like the CD player in my computer deciding to rotate something.
Rebelling?
Yeah.
All right. Well, in any event.
Something vibrated over here, and I don't know what it was.
Well, the less thought about that, the better. Whatever. Just real quickly here. on Eastbound and Down, Season 2, Episode 3, which I watched last night. Did you see the huge... I don't even know if it was like a geek shout-out or if it was just like... I don't know what the genesis of this was. So he he's over at the chick's house, the girl he's with in Mexico, and he's banging her. And then the next day he goes out in the living room, and it's like, there's the kid, and he finds out that she has a son. Did you catch the show that the kid is watching on television?
No.
Because I guess maybe part of the joke is, I guess it's a little bit of the humor in that the rest of the world, they get things like 40 years after they've aired here. The Wire aired here, and then like 9 years later, you know, they started, you know, coming to the BBC this fall, The Wire. So the kid, and this is presumably in 2010, the kid is watching on television the program Whiz Kids with Matthew Leperter from Little House on the Prairie, which was the failed television sort of pseudo spinoff of War Games. It was great, but it was awful. I mean, it was just one of the worst shows where it had, and I never know if it's Matthew Leperteau, but it's the kid with the X in his name from Little House on the Prairie, yeah, who has like the glasses and the whatever. So he's the Matthew Broderick, and then there's some chick who may be famous now, and I'm just forgetting it was her.
I kissed him at the Renaissance Fair once.
You told me about that. No, you told me off the air. I don't think you told the story on the air. Yeah. But it was Matthew Leperteau, and then some girl who was in the Ally Sheedy role from War Games, and then like, third guy who I think he was like the token, like the athletic friend, sort of, you know, like we're all brothers under the skin kind of a thing. And it had the terrible graphics, the font for the Whiz Kids, the logo for the show. It was that font like on an old ass computer where it's like a bunch of blunted off toothpicks that they together to make like the letters of the whatever, like on your calculator from 1985. And then the voice of the show was that Stephen Hawking voice, which was considered like real cutting edge. And they were going to bring up, Whiz Kids will continue after these messages. And it was just terrible. And, you know, and he was always hacking into like superpowered databases and stuff. It was like the worst combination of like bad graphics and yet like utterly implausibly complex hacking. And he building like a robot that served them lunch or something in his basement on his like VIC 20 or some crap, like on a modem that's basically powered by gerbils or something. So that's what the kid is watching last night on Eastbound and Down or on episode 3. It's just now I got to go find Whiz Kids. It's probably online.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Blah, blah, blah. Geek. Blah, blah, blah. Here's Don Taylor.
Oh, I'm all a flutter now. Tulsa police said they've arrested a man who ate a crack pipe to destroy evidence.
Wow.
Eljuan Heath, 41, was arrested Sunday outside a Quick Trip, which I guess is a convenience store. Officers had responded to the store to investigate a man selling drugs in the parking lot. And when they approached Heath, he stuck a crack pipe in his mouth and began eating it.
Good for him.
The officers arrested him after a short struggle. Police said Heath was wearing an ankle monitor for previous drug charges and was only 18 days away from being taken off probation. He was booked into the Tulsa County Jail on complaints of possession of drug paraphernalia, resisting arrest, and destroying evidence.
By the way, I'm finding the Whiz Kids theme right here. Oh my God! So people have—I should have guessed that this would be the case. So people have posted like entire episodes online in like 8 minute segments or something. So it aired 1983, 1984. So it was one season. The description, and this is just from some guy on YouTube who's typed this. User The Red City says, this is the theme to the 83-84 kids TV show Whiz Kids, which is not a kid show. It aired in prime time, sir. About a bunch of kids who would solve crimes with the aid of a computer and their BMX bikes, starring Matthew Leperteau, which I think is how you pronounce this. L-A-B-O-R, like labor. T-E-A-U-X.
I don't know.
Well, whatever, that guy. So, anyway.
Leperteau.
All right. Oh, my God. And so right next to that, there's the whole, like, you know, if you're watching this, would you also like to watch the theme song to Manimal? Would I?
See, this is why we don't play with the internet during the show, Rick.
Oh, my God.
Because you'll never stop.
Seriously. Automan, opening credits. All right. No closing credits for Automan. Clearly, the fan base is still growing for that show. It's nascent. Here's Don Taylor, and then we'll do Greatest Songs Ever Made here in just a
Well, why don't we do the Taser Watch? I have a Taser Watch.
Awesome. Sorry, let me close this Manimal intro, Don. All right. So just start playing randomly. All right. Sorry. God damn, I love technology. And, you know, the irony is that I'm using this technology to view the Whiz Kids, television show. And I'm doing it from a future that is, like, so unbelievably not what they imagined the future to look like. You know, people in the past, they so rarely got anything right about what the future would be.
That's true.
One of the only people who ever nailed, you know, the only people who ever nailed the future correctly, in my assessment, is sci-fi novelists, writers of sci-fi books. Now, not always, but I'm saying if you were to take the group of people that most frequently depicted the future as, let's say, 20, 30, 50 years ahead of time, in a way that it bears some resemblance to the way it actually turned out, it's like Ray Bradbury type guys. It was never, you know, like, it was never like guys who were making, like, World of Tomorrow movies. Like, those were always just, they were just so unbelievably comically off about, like, everything. Even if you go to, like, is it LAX that has the whole, like, futuristic design of the airport where, like, the parts of LAX are made to look like sort of like the, like, Tomorrowland or something?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. There's this, they have a big restaurant, revolving restaurant,
right.
The theme restaurant at LAX that a friend of mine who worked there said that it represented just a giant knot, which is, you know, traffic trying to get in and out of the airport. But, yeah. You know.
I am always fascinated by how people in the past thought the future would look. So, this is your Taser Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Your Taser Watch for Tuesday.
An 18-year-old Australian man faces a number of charges after West Melbourne police found him running down a busy road at 7 a.m. Monday morning wearing only swimming goggles next to a busy roadway. Police converged on the area and searched several neighborhood side streets for the nude man after they received reports. We found him, but he refused to stop and ended up getting tasered. They then took him to the hospital. According to a police spokesman, he was jogging buck naked and didn't even have on shoes. We suspect he was under the influence. He was a little incoherent.
You know, pardon me, it's the shoes thing that actually really gets to me, because then you're jogging on gravel and pebbles, and that's got to hurt.
He was, however, wearing swimming goggles, though.
That's, you know, okay, well, so then this is not entirely buck naked, you know, for all intents and purposes, kind of.
I always wonder in situations like that, though, how hard was the guy fighting back that they had to taser him? He was naked. They knew he didn't have a weapon.
Okay, but I mean, you got to figure if a guy is jogging naked, he obviously, you know, like with being sans shoes, he's obviously not minding that amount of pain. He obviously is. He's oblivious to any sort of sense of, you know, shame or decorum.
He was under the influence and incoherent.
Which seems, you know, and of course if he's on the angel dust, you know, that's a thing where they just apparently they can fly.
That's true, and he has superhuman Hulk-like strength.
That's right. He has swimming goggles. Maybe it was the man from Atlantis.
And he grows giant fangs like a werewolf.
Okay. I don't know why I went right to the man from Atlantis thing. I think it's because of WizKids and Manimal.
Manimal.
Right there. So anyway, and plus again, if you're a cop, don't you figure that you're just looking, you are just, it's like the bare minimum of meeting the requirement for tasing somebody. Like as soon as
it certainly
it's like.
It seems that way.
I mean, it's like they say, like, look, if you meet, you know, three of these, I mean, I guess technically you could, you know, and the guy's, no, but I mean, you still want to negotiate. It's, oh, yeah, I don't know. He met three of the standards, boss. You know, it's like as soon as it just, the meter even touches, like, tasable, you no, go for it.
Ma'am, you're going to have to put that cigarette out. You got to be at least 10 feet away from the building. But I am 10, you know.
Did you ever see that?
Anything.
Have you seen that video? And you probably haven't. There's probably several of these by now where it's the cop tases the woman when he pulls her over and she won't get off her cell phone.
Yeah.
And then he keeps saying, like,
I know
he says
exactly
at one point,
what you're talking about.
And the best part is he actually says at one point, I am going to tase you in the face. And she just says, go ahead. And man, he just lights her ass up. And it's just so satisfying to watch. And I know that it's probably technically an abuse of authority. But you know what? Sometimes.
Some people, yeah.
So here's the thing. Sometimes people got it coming. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's bastards who just have it coming to them.
Yeah.
And you can't just go around giving every son of a bitch what he deserves. But sometimes you can give it to some sons of bitches. And so deeply. And at that moment, it's like eating for two, he was tasing for 6 billion. He was tasing for all of us. He should have actually said this, like, I do this for all humanity. You know, and it's right in the face. All right. Well, suck that. There's your Taser Watch for Tuesday.
I can do it!
right, fantastic. That is your Taser Watch for Tuesday. So we still have to come. We have the greatest songs ever made that we will get here in just a skosh. Somebody asked me, and they just brought it back now because of the Taser Watch. They said, hey, Taser Watch reminds me of that thing that I emailed you about Kite Man. Kite Man was this public service announcement that I've referenced that you all did not see in California, IA,
no.
Where there's the weather guy who I think I'm trying to remember if I've actually had him on the show or if it was our friend Mike Chase. I think Mike Chase had him on the show. You folks who are from the Northwest will remember in the 70s and 80s, guy in a kite man, a guy in a kite outfit, and he was called Kite Man, imaginatively enough. And it was all about don't touch down power lines, and if your kite whines around a telephone line, you call an adult or whatever because it'll kill you otherwise. And so I think Mike Chase actually had the guy on and had and interviewed him. And it might have been, I think it was around the same time we talked to, what's his name, Don Rawich, the guy that made the Oregon Trail game. So I think I'm confusing the two in my head. So a guy says, have you found the video of the Kite Man commercial yet? No, but that's only because I haven't really been looking. So I'll try to dig that up for tomorrow.
Actually, if you Google Kite Man, you will find a number of people who are talking about how much they're looking for video of the Kite Man PSAs and they want them.
So now it's the Grail, right?
Yes.
So that's the thing. So everybody is looking for the Kite Man video. And props to the person on my Facebook the other day who just typed randomly, I like frogs. So, well done. Win to you, sir. By the way, speaking of electricity, we should say that it's nothing to fool around with.
Mm-mm.
And it's nothing to spend your time on because you're given a finite number of minutes and days and years and months on this planet. And really, if you can have someone else come and handle, you know, the messy business of... Because when you think about, you know, like you're doing, putting in like a wiring in your walls or whatever, or if you're like... let me just tell you this. You don't know from difficult. I mean, even if you kind of get the whole power thing in your house and how to, like, you know, what an amp is and, like, what a volt is... Did your dad ever do this thing? No, because he probably wasn't a cruel bastard. Did your dad ever do this thing? Although I'm not so sure now that I say that out loud, he might have been. Did you ever do the thing where he had you touch, like, hold a screwdriver, and then he would, like, touch electricity to the end of it? But it was a whole thing where, like, you want the kind that doesn't arc with the plastic handle. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about. No, but what he did do once is he had a electric racing car set that he was playing with one of my boy cousins, and I came in the room and I said, what's that? I said, pointing at this big black box, which of course was the Transformer
sure.
thing. And he said, why don't you touch it and find out?
Why don't you lick it? See what happens. Yeah, my dad did this thing where he had
my dad was a bastard.
His whole thing was like, it was like a throw you in the river so you can learn to swim thing, except there was no learning, like, it had no demonstrable upside to it. There was really no outcome of this that was beneficial. He basically gave me the choice. He said, look, I got a wrench, like a metal wrench. And then there was a screwdriver with the plastic handle. So I got a metal wrench, and then I got a metal screwdriver, but with a plastic handle on it. And he said, so if I attach electricity to, you know, to both of these, which one do you want to grab? And of course, I'm like, well, and I'm like, nine. I'm like, I don't know, the one with the plastic handle, I guess, because I'm thinking it's insulated, right? You know, and this is all a little fuzzy in my head, possibly because he jolted me with electricity. But so I grabbed the screwdriver, and all I remember is it seemed to arc from the actual metal shaft of the screwdriver, like, over the plastic thing, like, to my hand. Not really burning me as such, but it didn't feel very good. And then he sort of smugly took it all away and unwired it, and he said, now, if you'd asked me how many amps that had been, not just how many volts, you would have known. And I was like nine. I'm thinking, like, you are psychotic. You ought to be locked up in a room and looked at through a window for the rest of your life and then beaten every day at noon just because. Joe Squires won't do this to you, by the way, when he comes to your home. He'll avoid that. All I'm saying is, even if you are a crazy psychotic person who occasionally tortures your children with electricity, you probably got things to do, you know? Maybe animal bones to worship or something. You know, whatever it is you spend the rest of your time doing. The point is, electricity is very, very difficult, and it's complex. And have you ever tried to put it in a ceiling fan? Boy, I tried. I spent like 30 seconds trying to do that once, and then I realized what a fool's errand that was. Because
we got a ceiling fan when we got married. It was on my list of things that we registered for, and we never even bothered to try to put it up. We pulled out the instruction booklet and looked at it, and looked at the ceiling and looked at the instructions. Just like, we'll do this someday.
Yeah, and it's like, and the instructions all look like it's that jive from IKEA, where it's just like a happy Finnish man or whatever going like, Ergen blender. You know, with that hand, you're going, what? A into zero? What? You know, and it's like, it doesn't make it. And the ceiling fan is like, there's like 100 things there. It's the light. It's the fan. It's got to be like a special, like, it's not just like it's running through a regular socket. Like, it's got to, it's the wires that have the little, like, weird caps on them that you take off, and then it's like they're exposed bare wires, and then you're just all freaked out about it. Plus, it's like weight-bearing, right? So you got to put that metal panel thing there and make sure that it's attached to, like, something in the some magical godlike thing in the ceiling that keeps it from falling onto your bed, which is what it's always above, by the way. That or a table in the dining room, you know? So you're just going to be there laying in bed, and the last thing you see is be like whirling blade coming down at you. And you know what your dying thought will be? I should have contacted Squires Electric about this. You may only get to like, I should have... but you can go to squireselectric.com. before it's too late. SquiresElectric.com. That is the website, SquiresElectric.com. They're a brand new business partner here at the Emerson News Network and is part of the Rick Emerson Show. So you really ought to contact them because they know what they're doing. And, you know, even if you do know what you're doing, again, you know, it's the modern world. It's America. You dial these 10 numbers, 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. 1609, and that is how you can contact Squires Electric. They do free estimates, so you're going to know, you know, more or less what it's going to cost you before you decide if you're actually going to go forward with it. Maybe you're constructing, you know, an entire building like from scratch. You know, maybe you have a condo. Maybe you're actually starting your own business. Maybe you're actually building a home for you and your family. You know, you get them to do it. It's going to be done right, and that's all the wiring. I mean, that's Ethernet wiring. It's the electrical wiring. It's everything that needs to go into the wall, into the socket, anything. And they literally will do like the ceiling fan, the light, the single socket, the single outlet that doesn't work for some reason, or just quits, just quits functioning. You find them at SquiresElectric.com. It's SquiresElectric.com right here in Portland at 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is Squires Electric.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
So we'll do a couple more of these. We'll get greatest songs ever made on the way here in just a moment. Don't forget, tomorrow, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be here. He's bringing a top five, but I don't know what it is. He probably has forgotten he's supposed to bring a top five. Last time he was here, he like swore this blood oath that he was going to do it. He's probably forgotten. So we actually could just assign him one if we wish to be cruel.
That's true.
I should call him. We should just spring it on him and just see if he's put one together. So that's tomorrow. Join us on Thursday. We'll have Mr. Big Jim Willig here, also Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and Friday, Dave Helfrey, Baron Von Gulo, the man behind Fright Town, which is badassery incarnate. This is Don Taylor.
Several polls suggest Republicans are poised to gain a number of congressional seats in the November elections. Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the GOP's chief deputy whip, seemed optimistic when he spoke on State of the Union.
You fools, you're in danger! Can't you see? They're after you! They're after all of us! Our wives, our children, everyone! They're here already! You're next!
Sorry, wrong Kevin McCarthy. Hold on.
I think there's a great chance that we take the House.
He doesn't seem nearly as optimistic.
Okay.
Was that it?
Yes. Not so much.
You fools! You're in danger! Can't you see? They're after you! They're after all of us! Our wives, our children, everyone! They're here already! You're next!
So much as it is.
I think there's a great chance that we take the House.
You're just patiently waiting for me to get to this story so you could play that.
I spent like 10 minutes putting that joke together.
I think there's a great chance that we take the House.
At this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
I think there's a great chance that we take the House.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
If a deranged wife tries to poison her husband's mistress with deadly chemicals... Rick Emerson, does it count as terrorism?
What? No. Yes. What? No. No. Yes. Yes, it does. Yes. Yes. Everything is terrorism now. Yes. Yes.
Well,
terrorism.
The Supreme Court is going to be considering that question.
Oh, now I don't even. So now I don't even know if I'm right.
You won't know yet.
Fine.
After agreeing to hear an appeal from Carol Ann Bond, a Philadelphia lab worker who was sentenced to 6 years in prison for leaving toxic chemicals on Merlinda Haynes' doors, car, and in her mailbox in 2006.
You put the. I'm sorry. I stepped right there. I was trying to get to the Rube joke. I'm sorry. That's my fault. I suck.
You fools! You're in danger!
All right.
Nobody was injured in the attacks, but Bond was found guilty under a 1999 chemical weapons statute aimed at terrorists. Bond's lawyers argue that the law was not meant to be applied to scorned wives and have petitioned the court to throw the case out.
Well, Well, this is just like that. Who was it we were talking about? Was it somebody was ever talking about it in Florida or some place where it's like there's some law that was created for something that they're now just like using to imprison like everyone they don't like?
Yeah.
Do you remember we discussed that just recently? And it was something they're doing in Florida where it was like, you know, it was some anti-terror thing, but it's like your dog barks too loud, and then you just get put in a hole somewhere, you know, for the rest of your life.
Well, that was the one that was the anything that looks even remotely like it might possibly be a weapon of mass destruction.
You can be charged as though it were a weapon of, as though you had used it to intimidate people. You know, it's like you're threatening people with something that could be construed as being a bomb.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Laws like that are fascinating, by the way, because it just makes you wonder, like, how far it possibly can extend, you know, how far it goes. Not to be, real quickly, this does relate to this, sort of. You know where we're going to have on, and I shouldn't say this. I shouldn't say it before I can get it confirmed. But I do. I think we will be able to snag somebody from this measure. There's this measure 74 that's coming up on the ballot, which is the medical marijuana thing. Because
We do have an in.
Yeah, that is true. So this morning for Outlook Portland, it's not going to air for a while, but this morning for Outlook Portland, we have a mutual friend who was sort of handling some of the media and hooked us up with that interview. But it was the most fascinating interview because, you know, it's that thing that you and I have talked about like a million times about it seems like it's so difficult to get the answer to like what's legal and what's not with medical marijuana. And like everybody thinks they know and no two people agree on it. And this guy I talked to like knew it like backward and forward because he's the guy who actually wrote the new measure. He's the author, the co-author of the measure that's actually on the ballot. But I just learned some really fascinating things.
No, that would be great.
So I think we will sometime maybe early next week, I think we will do that. I was going to say late this week, but that's not going to work because then it's going to be like the medical pot guy and it's like Baron von Gulo in the same studio. And then it's like, it just seems like that could go so wrong.
What message are we sending?
I mean, because then you know the first thing that Dave, just in my mind, I make all my art while I'm ripped out of my gourd on whatever. You know, I can just totally see that happening. And then that's not the message that they're trying to send. So
I think there's a great chance that we take the house.
All right. Let's do one more here. That'll be the greatest songs ever. Never mind.
Nordic countries once again dominated the World Economic Forum's list of the most gender-equal nations in the world. Iceland is the king/queen for the second year in a row, with Norway, Finland, and Sweden in second, third, and fourth places. The WEF analysts examined equality in areas of politics, education, employment, and health when compiling the rankings. There were two African countries, South Africa and Lesotho, on the Europe Heavy Top 15 list, but not a single one from the Americas. The United States did pass Canada to come in at 19, the highest ranking for a North or South American country, and a significant improvement from its number 31 slot last year. The WEF says the bump is due to a higher number of women in President Obama's administration and a reduction in the country's gender pay gap.
So is that they ranked it based on, I knew pay was probably one of them.
Politics, education, employment, and health.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, because it's like it is weird when you look around, you know, and you see that like, I want to say Tehran, but that's probably wrong. But when you look at the list of countries that have had like female leaders, and it's always just countries that we would view as just be like the most repressive, you know, like throwback nations on earth. And it's like, and our president, Linda, you know, and he's like, it just makes no sense at all. So it's a world gone mad, Don Taylor. A world gone mad. Have we gone to everything except for, you know, I hold the greatest songs ever in my hand right here. We got through everything. We had Taser Watch, Pop Culture Authority, which is awesome, by the way. So I knew the part about the when you said, why was it PG-13? And I said, penis breath. Which is weird, you know, just like a thing to say. But I did not know that it was added intentionally. And by the way, I've never seen that re-released E.T. because why? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that in addition to taking out the guns, he removed the penis breath line. What a tool he is. Yeah, seriously. Kids are just like kids. You know what kids are? Kids are like spine be gone. just magically just like makes you a pile of gelatinous filmmaking goo. Is just incapable of, you know. That, I mean, just like in some alternate universe, a childless Steven Spielberg made a War of the Worlds that was good all the way through. Not just, you know, not just up until like the final 10 minutes of the film where it just descended into treacle. Anyway, let's see. So joining us tomorrow, Mr. Aaron Mesh. from Willamette Week, Jim Willigan, Anna Griffin on Thursday, and then Friday, Mr. Dave Helfrey, and so forth. Don't forget to get your submissions in for the Geek-O-Lantern contest. We've got up for grabs four, count them, one, two, three, four gifts from ThinkGeek.com. You can see these at rickemerson.com/pictures, plus a one. Now, see, in addition to that, see, here's what I'm saying. You got your four things from ThinkGeek, and then separate, apart from, above and beyond that, you got your $100 gift certificate. Which
like,
is sort
like
of awesome.
The cherry on top of the gigantic Geek Sunday.
Right. So I'm just, really, it's yours to lose, whoever you are right now. So, I mean, I'd get to carving if I were you. Are you eating those cheese and peanut butter crackers?
Yes.
Where does Sally sell seashells, Don Taylor?
The seashore.
Okay. Where did you get those? Did you buy those at the store?
No, I sold them for my husband.
But, I mean, where did they, in other words, were they from a vending machine?
No, he,
Because I don't imagine those being purchased in a store ever by anybody. That's a thing I can only picture coming from a vending machine, the little square cheese peanut butter crackers.
My husband really loves them, and so he will stop at someplace like Grocery Outlet or something where you can get, like, a box that has, like, 12 or 20 packages right. or something in there for, like, $1.79.
Because it's the box that is supposed to sit at the front desk at, like, a convenience.
Yeah, pretty much,
know,
yeah.
Store or something.
So then they'll sit around for a while, and he'll forget he has them, and he won't eat them. And then, so I grabbed a few, and I stuck them in the box over here of my stuff on the shelf over here.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them. There isn't. It's just, it's odd. It's the peanut butter, the cheese crackers with peanut butter, it's one of those foods that I picture people eating if they're around. But not actually taking the time to go to the store to buy. See also circus peanuts.
No, they're far inferior to like for example the little miniature Ritz crackers with the cheese or the peanut butter in them.
Wow,
which
those are
one
so
of the
great.
Most delicious things in the world.
Here's the thing: Sarah and Greg haven't had those. The next time they're on the show, whether it's this Friday, next Friday, we had to do
the cheese ones. Of those are just they're my favorite road trip food. Is a box of Ritz bits with the cheese.
All right, I gotta control myself because otherwise I'll just get all wonky. I'll get a big black dog up me about it or whatever. I don't know why it says that on the wall of the studio.
I don't know.
Also, by the way, here's what's on the wall of our studio. There's a whiteboard, which has a lot of graffito from various folks. And then it says, get a big black dog up here, which I think is from Kelly. And what's it? I'm so bad with names. It's from Australia over here. And then there's
Jules.
Jules, thank you. Do you know who's who, though?
I think Jules was the guy.
Me, too.
No, am I wrong?
No, I'm just saying I don't know.
No.
And then below that is a picture, I swear to God, of Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler riding, while clutching beer, of course, riding a plummeting donkey, which appears to be falling out of the sky to Earth, riding him in, you know, like on his way to the ground. And the caption says, the donkey screamed and the children cried. And final note before I get to this, because I said yesterday that we would talk about this. I got about two-thirds of the way through Dexter, and then I paused it to go make some toast, and then I forgot all about it until, like, about 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
There's your answer, by the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, oh, that's okay, let me pause this. Let me go, hold on, I gotta go toast some bread. I mean, of all the things to outstrip Dexter in terms of interest, toasting some bread. And then it was just like, I was so overwhelmed by the bread toasting that I never got back to
it
Dexter.
It was so much more entertaining than Dexter.
Seriously, that's just, so, you know, that is how that particular cookie crumbled. By the way, I'm going to remove this silence when this is posted online. But everybody, give me just 1 second. I'm going to monitor the signal here for just a second to make sure that we're not having that issue that we sometimes have with the weird clackety sound. Okay. Everybody, just talk amongst yourselves for a moment here. Aha. And sure enough, there was a. It was just. It's a weird thing, actually. We're going to be replacing this processing unit behind us. But it's like it's not like an overheating thing. It's just something about this audio processor that we use that at about the 2 hour mark. It develops this weird glitch, which is like a cyclical. So if you guys have heard the like sort of like a little popping sound, it's like, you know what it is? It's like a skip on a record when it sort of is at the end and the runoff groove and it's, you know, you're passed out and it's just playing in the runoff groove all night. And it's going. But around the 2 hour mark, it starts to kick in.
I don't think I ever hear it.
Well, you won't really notice it if there's a lot of audio happening. In other words, a lot, you know, talking, or there's like a sound playing, or you know, sounders, or music, or whatever. But if we were just to have like a, you know, a conversation with like, you know, silences, or if it were, you know, to be
like, that'll happen.
Yeah. So fortunately, you know, it doesn't really. But like during that interview with Dave Mustaine, he would sort of pause sometimes, and I'd say, Dave Mustaine, tell me about whatever, and he'd go, well, and he'd stop talking, and then you would hear it. Ah. So we are working on replacing this unit behind me. But that's so that's what that is. If you ever hear that sort of cyclical popping sound, which when I notice it, I do my very best to take out in post. I do literally fix it in post. That's not just a lie that I tell people. It's mostly a lie, but it's not always a lie.
Not just a lie.
So that is a thing that we're working on fixing. But anyway, so I wanted to make sure there wasn't going to be there to sort of ruin the whole song thing and so forth. All right, and by song thing, I mean this. I mean it is time for another exciting installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. George Carlin once said that the only good thing to come out of Christianity was the music. And while that might or might not be true, it probably wouldn't be true in the way that you'd expect. While Ave Maria and In Excelsis Deo spring from a certain
investigators
celebratory or reverential side of religion, just as powerful are those songs which serve as rebellious anthems of disobedience, ruminations on shame, the embrace of sin, or sometimes all of the above, as is the case with today's song. Released in 1984 and authored by the performer and her collaborators, the track could also be filed under songs it's hard to imagine receiving radio airplay, especially in the era of Ronald Reagan, Ed Meese, and multi-million-dollar pornography investigations. But, as is so often the case, the song's meaning was, if not exactly hidden, easy to overlook if you focused only on the bouncy rhythm and the sing-song delivery of the chorus. Dawn Taylor is smiling because she already knows what song it is. The chorus, which has the glorious added benefit of sounding like a delirious kind of womp-bomp-a-loop-bomp jangle of nonsense, was also deliberately constructed to make the song's meaning go right over the heads of children, or the less precocious among them. And the meaning was otherwise exceptionally clear, both in terms of lyric and delivery, yet tantalizingly vague at times. The protagonist is engaging in an act of, well, of self-pleasure. Yet accompanying this act is, I swear to you, gay porn, a specific gay porn magazine, no less, on the radio in 1984. Even more compelling is the song's background refrain, when the singer sort of half moans the line, "I hope he will understand," and it's not entirely clear whether she's referring to her boyfriend, a husband, her father, or, in fact, God, though an argument can be made that they are, in a Freudian sense anyway, somewhat interchangeable for purposes of Catholic guilt and or arousal. Pay attention also to the tone of the hook's delivery. While it's undeniably catchy and, well, bouncy, it doesn't sound quite happy. Have no doubt, the hook to this song is well written. The chorus sticks in your head. It's enjoyable. But enjoyable is not the same thing as sounding joyous. The chorus has a certain stridency to it, a sort of aggression of tone, an insistence of tone, augmented by the fact that the singer is performing in her more natural lower register instead of her occasionally squeaky falsetto. The insistent performance of the chorus makes you realize the performer had, you'll forgive me for this, serious matters at hand. And with that, I give you one of the greatest songs ever made. This is Cyndi Lauper and Shebop on the Emerson News Network.
Yeah.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, I should point out that the little crackling you're hearing in the background right now, that is in fact just the the irremovable crackle from the WizKids opening theme song, which somebody recorded on like a VHS tape that has been used so many times, it's amazing it actually held any audio or video at all. Wow, these opening credits are 2.5 minutes long. That was a simpler time. With Todd Porter as Hamilton. With long pauses between credits. With nothing happening on the screen.
People had longer attention spans back then.
And then for no readily apparent reason, just like in the middle of it, oh, here's the robot that he built. Just long stretches of guys riding BMX bicycles around traffic cones. All right, well, there you go. So I had to play this just because otherwise it was just going to nag at me. Oh, yeah, and girl as annoying little sister. All right. Please end. Oh, God, with villains in ill-fitting sport coats. Okay, we're done. There you go. So that's the WizKids theme. Before that, Greatest Songs Ever Made by Cyndi Lauper, which, by the way, I could listen to like every day, all day, for the rest of my life. It really is just one of the great songs of all time.
It is. It's great, and it's perky, and has kind of an upbeat, up-tempo beat to it, but it's vaguely sinister.
See, that's the thing that I mentioned that to people, and it's not that they disagree to such, it's that no one had ever really, it's just, and I didn't notice it until maybe a couple years ago when I was listening to it one day, and I thought, well, you know, it's basically like a bubblegum composition. It's got that onomatopoeia, but it's a songwriting device in which it's like just the sound of the word is really more important than, you know, it's the womp womp a loop womp a lomp bam boom, whatever. It doesn't really matter what it means. It's just that it sounds cool. And she almost has that kind of thing going on where it just sounds like nonsense, but it's sort of fun, perky, you know, nonsense. Yeah.
And it's musically referencing Bebop a Lula, which also has kind of a weird, sinister tone to it as well.
Which is true. I never really thought about that. Ah, we should play that tomorrow. You know, and it's got these weird keyboards in the background. The music to Shebop is strange too, because there's these moments where it veers from being having this shine on you crazy diamond organ sound to then this like pseudo whistle that's like clearly like on a synthesizer of some kind. But then it's got this strange, almost like electro clash, like keyboard guitar underneath it, and it seems like a fun, catchy, happy song. And so you listen to it, and you realize it does have this sort of aggressive, kind of dark, kind of stridency to it.
Well, and then there's that little bit of echo that put on her voice as well that makes it sound like she's in, like, you know, a dark hallway somewhere or something.
Yeah, I mean, she's clearly got, like, serious business to get down to. I mean, that is the, you know, it's just the best song. You know, the thing about Cyndi Lauper, and I'm not, you know, like I'm some massive Cyndi Lauper fanatic or whatever, but the great thing about her is that actually, if you've seen her sing any time in the last few years, her voice has actually gotten so much better.
Yeah.
She is really an amazing singer.
She really is.
You know, and she had the misfortune to be sort of the Salieri to Madonna's marketing Mozart, and you know, and kind of got overshadowed for that. But musically, she is, you know, far and away just has outclassed not just Madonna in terms of vocal ability, but in her former self as well. Really, she's just. And then there was that time that the bird pooed on her while she was singing, and that was unfortunate. Anyway, well, we should end the program now. We're just going to sit here all day. So this is the Rick Emerson radio program. Tomorrow, our guests will include Mr. Aaron Mesh from, Lambda Week. Also, Big Jim Willick will be here on Thursday. We'll talk to Anna Griffin on Thursday as well from The Oregonian. Friday, Dave Helfrey of Frighttown. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Angler. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. And of course, the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Tuesday, Geektober 12th, 2010. And that is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. There's an encore of Legion of News coming up next, following a musical interlude, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. See you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Bye now.